Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. Well, welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring radio show, MyBoxingFans.com official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with your host, Gable Montoya. I hope everybody had a good and safe New Year's Eve. You didn't end up in one of the free hotels, you know. They allow you to stay there as long as you want, you know, jailhouse. Hopefully everybody had a good time and made sure that everybody made it home safe and didn't act a fool. Because if that's one thing us boxing fans, boxing heads, we do, man. We act a fool and we have a little too much and, you know, too many in our system. But anyways, I'm glad to be back. We did take last week, we took it off just because there was things that had popped up. Unfortunately, I had to get things done at work or... Yeah, you know, I just couldn't get away. It's just that simple. I couldn't get away, and really disappointed because we had a lot of stuff that we wanted to talk about on Leaving a Ring. We had our New Year's awards that we wanted to talk about and give our take about of who should be Fighter of the Year. And I guess we can still do that. It's not too late. It's only a week over, and I know a lot of fight fans were emailing us and they were throwing in their two cents of who they think is should be Fighter of the Year, Prospect of the Year, and a lot of interesting I gotta say a lot of interesting takes and stuff. Some of them I agreed strongly. Some of them I disagreed very strongly. And, the day before, even going on Thursday, before it was canceled, me and Gabriel stood up and we were discussing all the names that were thrown at us. I mean, it was tons and tons of names of different fighters and even fighters that we had completely forgot about. Right, Gabe?
Yeah, there you are. I'm actually here. Yeah, it's been what a weird week. It's like... Just to kick it off, we lose the Vladimir Hay fight, which is, they should just call it too good to be true. Just get it done, because that fight is just way too good to be true. It's just not going to happen. I think Hay, it's almost like he's just happy to win in the press. Although, this time around, I don't know, I'm just kind of jumping right into this fight. I was actually looking at something just now about it. I'm not sure if I blame David Hay all completely for this. It sounds like he, from talking to his side of things, and I haven't had a chance yet to talk to Vlad's people. That's why I haven't written anything. I want to try to. It's my resolution for the year is make sure I get both sides of the story at all times,
right?
Not just one side of things. It sounds like they agreed to just about everything. There was a big dispute over the date of when the fight was going to take place, and particularly, Vlad wanted to do this Chisora fight, get it out of the way, because they'd agreed to it, and he wanted to keep his word on that, and then come right back like 9 weeks later and fight Hay. And I don't think that's that realistic, and Hay didn't feel confident with that, even though he was welcome to take an interim fight as well. I don't think he wanted to do that. And it's just, again, it's like if you don't want something to happen, you can put up an obstacle that makes it so it doesn't happen. Right now it's really hard to, I haven't talked to Manny Stewart yet. I haven't talked to Vlad yet. So
right.
It's hard for me to say exactly what went down other than reading other people's articles, which, is, I don't know.
This is the thing is that we have not been shy and we are guilty of bagging on David Hay. Well, I know I am. I bagged on him pretty tough and stuff, but being able to see his response of this fight falling apart, you have to kind of feel for him. I mean, they had agreed to a date of July 2nd. The venue was going to be in Germany, and it was going to be on Sky Sports and RTL. It seemed like, in David Hay's eyes and in his people's camp, it seemed like everything was a go. I mean, David Hay was basically agreeing to every term that Vladimir Klitschko was kind of throwing out there. Hey, we're going to walk in second. We're getting the red corner. Our name's going to be up first, you know, on the advertisement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. David Hayes said, okay, let's do it. I didn't want nothing to kind of roadblock this happening. And without him, without Kalisco's camp or anything, and like you said, you know, we don't know the complete story because we haven't heard the other half. In Hayes, though, in his statement is, I thought we were on until later we heard Kalisco announce another fight that he's going to be partaking in. And he's now left back in the dark. And he's, you know, like, hey, you know what, forget it. I'm just done with it. And I'm going to continue doing what I've been doing, which fight fans have not been completely happy about it, unless you're just a David Hay fan and stuff. But now you kind of have to lean back and say, hey, well, you know what, I don't blame him. I mean, now David Hay can get up on YouTube and say, you need to stop bitching out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, God, yeah, the whole thing is just, it's just frustrating as a fight fan. You know, you just look at it and you go, can we just get the fights that we want, you know? And I guess when you get to that level, though, when you're making that kind of money, you know, we had talked to, you know, last few weeks about how when Manny Pacquiao and Floyd and Joe Calzaghe, all the guys get to the elite level, they start looking at fights that benefit them versus challenges. And for a second there, I started to think that Vlad was not in that category. And you know, he was just kind of taking out the garbage, as you like to say. You know, just kind of, you know, not to be disrespectful, but taking out the second and third tier because that's what's available to him. You know, Adamic's not really in a rush to fight him. Hay didn't seem in a rush to fight him. But now I just kind of wonder, you know, what really is the deal? Are you actually wanting to take on Hay, who is kind of his Vitaly to, you know, to Vlad's Lennox Lewis at the end of his career? You know, he's kind of the younger lion that's right there that should be taken on, that should be the fight that we get. It's the first real challenge in years that you look at it and go, you know, as much as how I feel about how the fight will play out, Hay's a legitimate guy that could be dangerous. I know a lot of guys that I respect are picking him to win.
Right.
So why not make the fight? You know, I mean, are you going to make that much more with Chisora? Maybe he is going to make a lot more with Chisora. But, you know, Hay also has said, I'm going to retire in October, and I don't really need the Klitschko's now. And I disagree with him. I think his legacy was just kind of beginning.
Yeah.
Him and Adamic never fought as cruiserweights, and to me that was the other best cruiserweight in the world, and they never got it on. Maybe that fight can materialize. You know, maybe we'll get something out of it. Right now, it just seems like posturing. I'm not a big fan of negotiating in the media, and because it's always kind of slanted. You know, one guy's going to come out and release certain details that he wants you to see so that it looks like his story holds up. The other guy's going to do the same thing, and somewhere in between is the truth. You know, and until
Absolutely.
We really get to the bottom of it, it's really just a failed negotiation. I don't think there's fear. You know, I think David Hay would know better than anybody that most fighters don't fear other fighters. It's not about fear. It's about risk versus reward. And
you know,
I think that's what it came down to for Vlad.
You know, the thing is that it's frustrating is that we are not getting the fights that we want. I mean, though there is a fight that we are getting that a lot of us did want, but it was in a lot of ways it kind of got rushed to us. But going back to David Hay and Kalisco, and I'll talk about that fight I'm kind of bringing up in the mix of what we're talking about. I just don't want to jump off the subject and then keep going back. I want to finish off this topic here is that, you know, you look at Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, you look at David Hay, you look at Kalisco. You know, in the beginning, they were drawing blood, and we wanted to see a blood spill. Now we're not seeing anything. We're not seeing a drop. We're not seeing a cleanup of the mess that was supposed to happen after a feast of fights that was supposed to materialize. Instead, we're getting doors closed right in our face. And that's the sad part about it is that it's the fight fans that are just suffering, but it's also, in a lot of ways, it's the fight fans' fault because we have allowed these guys to negotiate in power of being babies about doing particular things, being able to say, well, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that, because nobody's really honestly forcing them. There is no force, because David Hay, and you know what? You know what, Gabe? I agree with you. He does need Kalisco. But does he really need them? He's still generate a large amount of money because he can be able to pack an arena in England. He's almost in that stature where Manny Pacquiao is now, too. He can fill up an arena. Same thing with Klitschko in Germany, where now they're like, in a lot of ways, they're right. They could fight a ghost. They can fight a poster of the fighter they're supposed to be, and they're still gonna fill up that arena. And that's a lot of ways. It's a lot of the fault of the casual fans that outnumber us hardcore fight fans.
Yeah, I think need is something to be clarified. I mean, I think Vlad, in some sense, his legacy is pretty well set.
Right. I don't think a lot of these fighters no longer are even trying to fight for legacy. I think they're more fighting for the wallet size now, you know?
Well, it depends on, I think, where you are in your career, you know? And Vlad's story has been a rocky one, you know, losing early, then coming back and losing again, you know, and then losing yet again. But then he's overcome all that. And, you know, he's come back and he beat Lehman Brewster, although a very faded version. He beat Sam Peter, who had already lost to his brother as well.
Right.
He'd already been beaten. But he kind of, closed the chapter, closed the book on that. What Hay represents is almost a fresh start in the sense that here's a guy that's a challenge. He's a guy that's once defeated, but he's gotten over it and he's made a name for himself, got titles, became the best cruiserweight. At the time, that wasn't Tomasz Adamek, and then has gotten a belt. What he represents is a clear and present danger. And if Vlad wants to be known as a guy that took on every challenge, and then had this new guy pop up and went after him and took him out, that would be a hell of a cherry on top of a pretty good legacy.
Right.
Pretty much the man at heavyweight. But in terms of need in pocketbook and that he needs somebody else to draw at the box office, he doesn't need him at all.
I don't think Latimer needs. Yeah,
Hay
does. I agree with you on that. Hay does, but in a lot of ways, he doesn't.
Not in pocketbook. He needs
in
legacy.
Right. Not in legacy. In legacy, absolutely. But unfortunately, legacy doesn't pay the bills anymore for these guys. It's the pocketbook and that checkbook. You know that ching ching.
Well,
that's what pays them. You know.
Everything is timing. You know, and if you think back to one of the last great super fights, and it wasn't even a great fight. It was actually an awful fight. But of two prime guys where everything was – where the stars were completely aligned for this fight to happen was really like Telehoya Trinidad in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
You had two guys who were prime welterweights who had sizable bodies of work at other weight class for Telehoya, and he had 7 defenses of his title at welterweight. Tito had 14 defenses. He had a solid – background. He also had been brought up and promoted the right way so that when he came time to negotiate, he had a sizable following. He'd been on a ton of pay-per-views. Everybody knew who he was, and he was the clear and present danger to Oscar De La Hoya in every sense. I mean, maybe not monetarily, because Oscar, is one of the greatest draws in the history of the sport, if not the greatest. But in terms of just who he was, there was no way Oscar was going to get out of not fighting him. And Tito's legacy or his career really couldn't move forward without fighting Oscar. It just had to happen.
Exactly.
And you look at Manny and Floyd, their legacies are already set. They're already in that upper echelon. They don't really need to prove anything to us. We want to see it. And really, to prove who's the better guy between them, we have to see it. But for them, they don't need to do it.
No, they don't.
Not better get it, And it's kind of the same situation here with Hay and Klitschko. They don't really need to do it in terms of money. They can walk away and, criticism gets a little bit deafened, under the cushion of millions and millions of dollars, When you have like $100 million in the bank or $50 million in the bank, what do you really care what I'm going to write about you? What some fans going to say,
what you
honestly?
Really gonna, what do you care about the fact that I'm going to make numerous YouTube videos about you or put up pictures of you and stuff on your face on a Kentucky Fried Chicken box,
kids cover your ears, but they have what I would call fuck you money at this point.
I wish I had that. You know what I'm saying? I wish I had that type of money, the F you money.
Oh,
I could go to the bank and say, I don't have to say nothing to the teller. I just look at him and say, F you. Yes, no problem. How much? Yeah. How many FUs do you want? Give me a lot of FUs. How about that? You know, and
I've got the attitude, but not the wallet. You know.
Yeah. You
that's
know
exactly what they've got. So again, I always just point to the lower levels. Yeah, I just point to the lower levels of guys. There's a guy I'm writing tonight, and by lower, I don't mean you know like less than. It's just guys coming up. I'm writing about Javier Torres, who works for who fights under the World Series of Boxing. You know, the LA Matadors. Yeah, we had him on the show, and hell of a guy. I think he's a hell of a young heavyweight talent. I'm kind of just paying attention to those guys, you know, and everybody kind of in between. Elite guys, I don't really make resolutions, but it's kind of one to just let go of worrying about what they're going to do, because they're just going to do what they're going to do. And no matter how much pressure we put on them, they've hit a certain level, and that they don't really care. You know,
no,
they don't. They're done caring, and so we just move on to the Bradleys and the Alexanders. You know,
in a lot of ways, it's almost like it is a relationship. If you really think about this, you're following a fighter from the beginning. You're all excited. You open the car door. You push the seat back so they can sit down. You offer anything, you know, you'll drive across town just to bring them something, you know, and eventually after a amount of time, it kind of dies, you know, and it dies out with these fighters when they're no longer are giving us the fights that we're asking for. In a lot of ways, you know, fight fans, we are spoiled to the point where we start believing that, hey, you owe us this. And we don't understand that fighters, they look at it like a business. You know, a prime example is having Timothy Bradley on the show. And you know, I had to agree with him, Gabe, about the fact that he even mentioned something that I completely agreed with him when he had said the Devon Alexander fight would have been a super fight if it would have held off for another year or two. I'm a businessman, but I'm being pushed to doing it because HBO wants it, and among other people. And I agree with them. Is this a super fight? No. I think it's a great fight. It's a matchup that we all wanted, but I would have been okay in waiting to see it a year to 2 years from now to see if these guys continue, you know, on their journey of continuing winning and building up the credibility to make this a super fight. Now this is just labeled a super fight. This is not something that has the aura of being a super fight.
No, the bloom is off the rose a little bit. And maybe, you know, it's because neither guy really looked particularly great in their last, you know, couple fights. You know, even there were winning efforts, although I didn't think Alexander beat Kotelnik. You know, they looked vulnerable. They didn't look quite as dominant as maybe they should have. And they've also been sitting on the shelf for a long time in between those fights and the fight that's coming up. I mean, it's a great matchup. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to cover it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, everybody's going to be checking it out. But it just happened way too soon. And, you know, I don't think either guy – I mean, Tim Bradley has kind of not reached the apex of his potential, but is as good as he's going to be at this point. I don't think like one more fight in between would have done much for him, other than they should have done a double bill where they fought on the same card and built towards this. But I think Devon Alexander is still cooking. I don't think he's quite done, and they're pulling him out of the oven and serving him up right now. And I think that's to his detriment. Like, I mean, Kathy Duva said it on her show that the loser is going to come out of this, and we may never find out how great they could have been because
exactly.
They got rushed into a fight like this.
And there's so many other
–
well, this is the other thing, too. You have two of the best, Alexander and Bradley, go at it. But, yeah, you have a set of other few guys that are in the division still simmering. We're still trying to find out if they're the best. And we're going to lose all of that. You know, we're going to lose who is the best, because it could be potentially we might never see them – get in the mix, because the fact of the matter, like you had said, Oscar De La Hoya and Tito Trinidad were at a peak of the time of their career where they had to fight each other in order to really show who was the best in that division. They had to face each other, where these other guys,
yeah,
they could kind of shy away from it and say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to, you know, I can hold off, you know. And now we may not ever get that. Now we may not ever get that super fight at 140. We may still be in that kind of – in that kind of a loom of still wondering, what if? What if what if we would have waited with Alexander? What more could we have gotten from him?
Well, I think people worry about, like, well, what if one of them loses? I'm like, well, then we'll deal with the guy that beat them. You know, then we've got another good fighter. Or what if we stopped, you know, worrying about losses so much? Because it always depends on how you lose. I mean, you look at, like, the Ortiz fight with Peterson, and, you know, it came out with a majority draw. But to me, it was like, even in his losing effort, Peterson, to me, his stock has kind of risen. He's still not quite all there, not putting it all together. But in the back end of fights, that dude is a dog. He's still there trying to win. And I'm not going to take that away from him. As long as he keeps trying, he's a high-level guy. He didn't get blown out. You know, went the distance both times. I still want to see that guy in another fight. I think we overvalue the undefeated record way too much. We're too worried about it. And I think that's a network thing. You can just sell this guy undefeated. I mean, did people really care after Oscar lost to Trinidad? Or even after he lost to Mosley? They still watched him.
Tito lost. You know, when Tito lost to Bernard Hopkins. I mean, even to right now, I mean, if Tito would say, hey, I'm going to make a comeback.
A lot
of people would still watch. And when he did it with Roy Jones, a lot of people tuned in. I was one of them. I was, like, hoping to see, hey, a glimpse of the old Tito Trinidad. You know, I'm a huge Tito fan. You know, I'm one of those guys. This is the funny thing, is that you got the guys now that are Manny Pacquiao fans, and they're Floyd Mayweather. I'm one of the Tito fans still that sometimes just dreams and thinks like, wow, what if he could just get back to the youth, the fountain of youth, and just come back, you know, the Tito of the old. What could we get out of that, you know?
The thing that I loved about him, and that I love about the old school fighters, like Tommy Hearns, I mean, his famous words, I shall return, is, if it doesn't bother him that he lost, then why should it bother me? I'm just watching. I didn't get knocked out. I didn't get beat. You know, if that dude's willing to come back, and Tommy Hearns is, to me, a perfect example of a guy that never let a loss, you know, maybe I'm sure it upset him, and off screen, but when it came time to get back in the ring, you never saw him. Tommy looks a little shy, you know, in this fight. Looks, you know, like he's a little afraid to get hit. No, he just kept coming in there and going for it. And that, to me, is a true fighter. And that's kind of one of the things we're missing. Because we care so much about undefeated and we worry and kind of coddle these guys, they're coddling themselves, and they're worried about it.
Look at Roberto Duran getting knocked out by Tommy the Hitman Hearns. I mean, it was a devastating knockout. You know, the whole arena and everybody outside, I'm surprised the windows didn't burst from that hit that Tommy Hearns was able to land. You know, and he made this tremendous comeback. And fight fans still were there, supportive, understanding that, hey, everybody has a bad night. The O does not make the man. You know what I mean? It's just that old saying, the tools don't make the man. It's the man that makes the tools, you know. But I tell you what, there's a lot of interesting things happening. And, you know, boxing right now is at a very quiet storm. But there are some very interesting things that are happening. We're going to have a great show. We have a great lineup of guests that are going to be coming on Leaving the Ring to speak to myself and my host, Gabriel. The phone lines will be open for any fight fan that want to call in and chop it up with either me or my co-host here at 347-215-7598. I'm still getting over my hangover, man, from New Year's Eve, you know. I want, you know what, I tell you what, if you want to call in and let me know, I'd like to find out who was the guy that ended up outside in their boxers on the front lawn and waking up and wondering where they were at, you know. That's the guy that I want to meet. That's the dude that I want to party with and stuff, you know, that knows how to have a good time, because I've never ended up in the front lawn in my underwears and stuff like that, but I've sure ended up in the car, you know, in the back seat and stuff, and going, damn, I thought I was in the club. You know, I thought I was in there stuff. So, anyways, Zab Judah, who's still making his comeback, he's got a very interesting fight. But also, even though he's got this interesting fight coming up, there's rumors of him having Peterson. If he's successful, he can get Peterson, who is scheduled, Anthony Peterson, right? No, I'm sorry. It's Lamont Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's scheduled to be facing Amir Khan. Is that right, Gabe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like right now. Yeah, in April.
You know, but it's not Peterson that might get Zab. I believe what the promise is Zab is going to get the winner of Khan and, or Peterson. Very interesting. I know some fight fans, we had this whole thing, a list of, is he still around? And we had about over 80 people that emailed us, is Zab Judah around? And I'm like, well, yeah, he is around. You know, he actually looked pretty decent. Now, whether or not he's going to improve, is he going to get better? I don't know. Has he kind of settled down? Gabriel, we were talking about that earlier today. Has he settled down in kind of finding his rhythm of being an older fighter, being a more intelligent fighter? It's kind of, we still got to see if he can. But I got to say, he's being very consistent. Not like in the past, a couple years ago, where you maybe saw him fight once and then you didn't hear nothing from him. He kind of fell off the face of earth, and all of a sudden he just popped back up. What are your thoughts about it, man?
Yeah, I don't really have a big problem with it. I mean, my big problem with him is the inactivity, and it seems like Kathy has recognized that and said, you know, we're going to keep him fighting often. You know, when you know you have a fight scheduled, you're going to get your ass in the gym. And I think, you know, idle time has always been the enemy of Zab Judah, you know, where he just kind of fights and then just kind of languishes for a while, gets out of shape. Then you're always kind of starting over again. And now, you know, with him in the mix, I mean, he's an experienced, you know, a fighter with world championship experience. He's had title belts. I think I have no problem with the fights that he's getting. And I guess there was some rumor that Kaiser Mabuza's people might pull out of the fight with Judah because the protocol is that you have to send a courier or be there in person for the purse bid, which they lost. The main events won. And these people were going to double bid. I think it was like 100 grand is what they said. The purse bid ended up being like 50,000. They're filing a protest, and Mabuza might pull out because of this. But at the same time, like right as I was reading that story, Steve Kim puts on his Twitter that it's a done deal at the Prudential Center, March 5th, Mabuza versus Judah. And I tended to trust Steve's, you know, sources that's a done deal. We'll see how it goes, though. You know, to me, if Zab can win and pick up that title, Mabuza's not an easy fight. He's a quality fighter. It's a good fight.
He's a contender,
you know? Yeah, he's definitely a contender. It's a 50-50 fight, you know, especially with Zab's age. That's always going to be, you know, against him. And the fact that he kind of fades late in fights and that dudes can come on and he can be hurt. He hasn't fixed that problem. So, you know, if he pulls it out, he's going to have to earn it. And in that case, let's see him against, you know, Peterson. Let's see him against Khan. Why not, you know?
You know, Mabuza...
I mean, if Madonna can hit him with a slow right, Zab can hit him with a fast left, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Definitely, you know. And, you know, the thing, too, is that the key thing is you said is he hasn't figured out to kind of pace himself so he doesn't gas out. He doesn't fall into that fatigue mode where he doesn't look sharp. He looks like he's all over the ring. He's obviously has not learned how to control himself enough when he's tired, you know, his body just kind of breaks down and he shuts down, not just physically, but mentally, he just shuts down, you know, it's just like, it's almost like he has an outer body experience, you know, he's like all over the place and he hasn't been able to do that. Mabuza, if I was in his camp, I would say, hey, let Zab do as much as he can. Let him throw as many punches as he wants, okay? Just keep your hands up high. Keep, you know, moving your head. Stick the jab out there, which because whenever you stick a punch, you know, he's going to return it. He's going to want to try to counter. He likes to kind of he's a little hyper in that ring, we could say. He's a little hyper in those first couple of rounds, and then you come on. Wait till those later rounds. Wait till it gets deeper and deeper out there, the sail, and see. Then you decide to leash out the shark. That's the only way right now. That's the thing that I think that Zab is having a lot of problems with, where, like you had mentioned before, Roy Jones was able to find, and later on in his career, knowing, say, listen, I have great gifts, but they're diminishing because of age. I'm leaving that part of my career. I'm leaving that part of myself in the past. I need to find my new self of today, and I got to kind of mold myself and now rebuild myself. And I think Zab's on the right track, though, Gabe. You know, I don't want to, you know, dump too much trash on the poor guy, because I think he's on the right track. Being consistent, to the Hit Factory in Vegas, you know, being surrounded with fighters, being in the gym, he's being a gym rat, you know, but he still has to work out those kinks. And those kinks are pretty bad creases that he's got to iron out really, really a whole lot. He's got to take it to the dry cleaner, you know, unfortunately. He's got to take it out of the dry cleaner and not worry about the, you know, the rim hat or none of that stuff. No more, you know, throwing the dice. He's just got to worry about fight. He's got to shit it, eat it, sleep it, think it, and that's it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the problem with Zab, I guess, just, you know, from a strictly, I believe that he is very focused, and I've talked to people out in Vegas, and they're...
He seems like it.
We've got our first guest calling in right now. So, Dave, I'm going to go on hold. We'll be right back with Tommy Lane.
Go right ahead, you know. And if he does get past Mambuza, I got to say, whoever he gets, Khan, Peterson, I know the Peterson people are being very confident. He got a draw with Ortiz. Interesting fight, even with Khan. Having Peterson, not a very, very hard hitter. It's kind of... In a lot of ways, I was telling a few people, it's kind of sad for Peterson being a very decorated prospect, a guy that was a lot of promising, was a slick fighter. We even rumored to give Floyd Mayweather a run for his money in a sparring. I mean, and helping him out in some sparring. And how fast, really, honestly, he's kind of fell off track. You know, he's not no more. He's kind of a trick pony for some fighters, and he's been, you know, thrown around. From Bradley to Ortiz gets the draw, but, you know, we all know Ortiz took that fight, and now he's got a Khan fight, he's getting the payday that he's been looking for, the exposure. But now you got to say, hey, the guy is now more or less a stepping stone, or he's just a good contender to give somebody rounds to keep marketing the whoever their HBO fighter or a promotional fighter that you need to continually build themselves with somebody that has a durable name. You know, that's been done like that for many years in boxing. It's nothing new. But the good thing about it is Peterson still has the skills to upset somebody. He doesn't have the power, but he has the determination. You saw that with Ortiz. He was rocked. He was hurt. He was dropped. But then he just came back. He kind of shook it off. Didn't get discouraged, didn't say, okay, you know what, I'm done, let me fold, let me get on one knees, when we've seen that prior with other contenders that we couldn't even name them contenders and stuff, they're C-class, D-class fighters. Peterson said, no, I didn't come here just for a paycheck, and I think that's what I'm really fascinated with the kid, is that he didn't come for a paycheck. He understands, I have to do something, I have to continue, I have to try to, you know, reach and grab the impossible. Even though all the odds are against me, even though I'm being written off, and even though I am being looked at as a stepping stone for other fighters. That's what I like about Peterson, you know. And we were able to release a story on leavingthering.com. I hope you guys were able to check that out, about Alfredo Angulo. We did release it. We did run into a very reliable resource that had a chance to speak to Angulo. We haven't got it from the horse's mouth whether Angulo is jumping ship, but it looks like it could happen. Makes a lot of sense. And in terms of loyalty, is it unfortunately, in this business of boxing, there is no such thing as loyalty. I'm not sure if my co-host is back on, because I want to get him on. Are you there, brother?
Back. Yep.
Okay.
We're here with Let's Get It On Promotions, Tommy Lane. Tommy, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, brother. How you doing, brother?
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Hey, so are you over here in the Bay, or are you still up in Reno right now?
I'm in New York right now. I've just been out here for a week. Terry is on the West Coast. He'll be traveling to the Bay tomorrow, and then I'm actually flying to Las Vegas tomorrow for the Friday night fights. We have a good friend of ours, Lonnie Smith, is on the card, so I'm going to go down there to support him, and Terry's going to go over and support Brandon Gonzalez.
Well, that's great, man. Well, first off, you know, Happy New Year's, brother. I didn't have a chance to say that to you. I don't know, Gabriel, if you know, but Tommy's a rock. He parties like a rock star and stuff.
Yeah. More like a video game fan this year, but really just a sad old guy kind of New Year's, really. But Terry, let's get into your what you guys have planned for the year. I just did a story on Brandon. I'm really Dave is actually the guy that introduced me to Brandon and him as a fighter. Talk a little bit about what you guys have planned with him. He seems to be kind of the flagship fighter for you guys. He's a guy of the future. So just talk a little bit about what's going on with him and what your plans are.
Yeah, Brandon Gonzalez is a bona fide prospect and a guy who has all the tools, in my opinion, to be, you know, to go to the tops of the sport. And his last fight was in late August in Fallon, Nevada, and he had a good knockout win. And he's an exciting fighter to watch. You know, he's slick, he's fast, and he, you know, he has power, and he has the killer instinct, and he'll go in for the kill. So our plan with him is to, you know, this fight on Friday against Lester Gonzalez is, you know, definitely one of his biggest step up to one of his toughest fight. Lester Gonzalez is a good fighter, so it should be, and it'll be on TV, so it should be an opportunity for Brandon to make a statement and really show his skills. And then, you know, after that, you know, once people become familiar with him, you know, the ESPN Friday Night Fights, I think he'll go over really well on, or a show box. And then after that, you know, a regional title just to move him in the rankings. But he's really a good special fighter and, you know, definitely our best prospect in for Let's Get It On right now.
Tommy, you know, when we speak of a best prospect, especially out of your guys' camp in your stable, but best prospect overall in the middleweight division, I mean, can you talk a little bit about how difficult it's been, since the word best, though, for him seems to really fit the bill, because it doesn't look like nobody really wants to mix it up with this kid.
Yeah, he's at the point in his career where it can get tricky and frankly expensive to bring in the right guys to build his career. Because, you know, you have the guys who are also considered prospects who, frankly, aren't going to, and it's understandable, aren't going to gain much by, on paper, beating a guy who is 13-0 and whose name is just starting to blossom. You know, they're kind of on the same track, but I think Brandon is the best middleweight prospect out there. I think he beats Fernando Guerrero. I think he beats Sean Porter at 160 easy. And even David Lemieux, he's the total package. He can box and he can punch I've seen him get hurt and he sticks with it and has the guts to contend with anyone.
Well, you know, speaking of that, David Lemieux and Fernando Guerrero, is there a truth of this that because this has been told to me that those fights, those two names right there, there was potential matchup with them, but it seemed like it, when it was about to happen, the other team decided to pull out of it without explanation.
Well, it's tough to say. Yeah, those both of those fights were fights that came across our way and were fights that we were interested in taking. And they didn't happen. It's tough to say, you know, if they pulled out because they saw a threat in Brandon, or if they didn't see much to gain out of fighting a really good fighter who is, if they beat him, you know, they should have beat him because they had the more fights, theoretically more experience. in the professional level. And but if they get beat, then, you know, they're kind of exposed at not being the best. So I kind of guess that that's the reason. But it's tough to say. You know, I'm not saying Devin Lemieux or Guerrero as fighters were turned down the fight, but for whatever reason, they did not happen.
You guys are pretty young guys to be running a promotional company. Although you were raised in boxing, obviously, you know, with your dad and everything, how hard is it to just be in the room and kind of get that respect? Like, you know, there's such an old boy network of established promoters that you're having to deal with. How hard is it to move a guy like this and really, you know, kind of keep him within your fold and move him forward on the networks? I mean, is it going to take a special talent like a Gonzalez who's exciting, but also technically skilled?
Yeah, I mean, the main foundation for any promotional firm is the fighters and the level of talent and the overall package of, you know, if these guys are going to be stars. So I would say that the toughest part with our age, maybe not so much our age, just, you know, as kind of everyone knows, it's just the nature of the industry right now, but with the networks. Getting network, you know, date for show for Brandon would be a little bit difficult. But Terry and I have good relationships with basically all of the promoters. You know, it's just a vast network, as I'm sure you guys know. But we have good relationships with them. You know, it has been a little bit tricky with our age at some points with some aspects that we feel that we maybe would have not gotten treated the same way if we were, you know, an older, more established guy. But for the most part, I mean, you know, with some of the older, more well-established promoters or promotional firms are our biggest, you know, supporters and are really, you know, have kind of looked after us in ways and kind of, taught us things, and you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. But it's been a problem, but not necessarily within the promotional world, as more so as just with, you know, kind of being taken seriously on a bunch of different fronts.
Is that why? Because, you know, when you guys kind of came out in the scene, it was the Let's Get It On promotions. It seemed like it was going fairly great. It was going fantastic. You know, to say the Grand at the Sierra Grand, and then it went to Top Rank. You guys co-promoted with Top Rank, and now Golden Boy. Are you guys kind of looking at, like, look, we got to kind of venture out with the guys that have been doing a little longer, maybe just to gain the credibility and to kind of see more or less how they function, not yourselves as a business, but how they function with the networks and to build that relationship? Is that why this is happening here now?
Yeah, I mean, partly co-promoting with these bigger companies who have been around and have seen and know the ins and outs of every level of the sport is definitely a learning process and something that, you know, we like to do to learn and learn new things. But I would say for, you know, most smaller promotional companies, you know, you have to co-promote with the bigger companies at this point who have the TV dates and who have the resources to give your fighter exposure. And then hopefully, you know, you get this guy enough exposure where you're able to shop him to any given network on your own. And we're at that point with you know, Jesse Brinkley. We could shop him to ESPN or even Kasim Uma and Brandon Gonzalez at this point. So it's starting to get there. But yeah, co-promoting with the bigger companies to get your fighter exposure is definitely you know, a way to play the game.
Absolutely.
So what are you looking for? What are you looking for in terms of the rest of the year and in terms of the rest of your roster?
Well, we're going to be figuring out our next date for our own show within probably the next week or two. We have the Boxing Promoters Association meeting this Monday in Vegas, and actually a lot of business kind of gets done at these things with the you know, talking with the other promoters of what they have available. So that'll kind of give us an idea. But our own show, we're looking around probably in the late February, early March-ish time, and as far as like a headliner for the show, or even where it'd be likely Reno or Lake Tahoe. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at now. There's like, you know, a bunch of things that are up in the air that hopefully we're going to get some answers to in a week or so.
That sounds great. Sounds great. Yeah. And stuff. You know, I'm sorry. I was going to say, I'm really happy to see that, you know, Brandon Flawless Gonzalez is going to be at Fairfield. I've been waiting for him to kind of open up. And having a TV date and getting the exposure, Tommy, it's just exciting, because I've been such a huge supporter and a fan of Brandon, and been waiting to kind of see him, you know, grow. Not just I've been able to witness him, but a lot of our listeners, a lot of the followers of Leaving the Ring have not been able to. And it's just exciting to see that now that people are going to be able to put the face with the voice, and the stories that we have been throwing out there about him. This is a great, very decorated amateur fighter that came out and turned pro, and then signed with you guys, who you and your brother, great set of guys. And I always encourage the fight fans to try to go to your guys' events, because I got to say, first off, either regardless you guys are young, you were probably you guys were one of the most down to earth promoters to meet. Really easy to get along with. It's fantastic and stuff. But having this prospect here who I think can really put back the Bay Area back on the map, and like I said, a kid that was very decorated, but at the same time has been in with some of the biggest names right now in boxing, you know, from Andre Ward to Durrell, Andre Durrell to, Arthur Abraham. It just tells you the experience and the kid that you do have in your hands, and not being able to take the shot with David Lemieux from Canada or with Fernando Guerrero. It just tells you the quality that you guys are kind of holding on to, and I just can't wait to see what we're going to be able to see grow with you guys.
Well, I appreciate all that a lot. I mean, that means the world to my brother and I. Brandon Gonzalez is a very, very talented guy, and a nice guy, and a family man, and a humble guy. And I really think the sky's the limit with him. I mean, every promoter is going to say that about his fighter, but I mean, when you see, when you see just the total package with him, how he puts his punches together, it's just kind of, there's just, it kind of reminds me of the middleweight division in the, in the 80s and even it just, he's kind of like a 90s fighter. He's just like Mike McCallum or Julian Jackson, just kind of that. I just kind of get that feeling. He's down with Jeff Mayweather and in Vegas, and is getting great sparring and great work. So I think 2011 is going to be a huge year for Brandon.
I hope so, man.
I'm really excited. Talking to him, he seemed really excited working with Jeff and all the things that he's learning. And just, I think it was a really smart move to kind of move him to a place where the talent level around him is so much higher. You know, the sparring is better. The professionals they go through there, he gets to see how they work. And that he just seemed like he's really ready to go to the next level. And I'm glad you guys recognize that. And I just want to thank you for coming on the show, man. I think it's really important for us to support the smaller level, or the younger promoters, as well as the top level guys, because you guys are really the grassroots. You guys promote the local shows. You keep the interest going on a local level, and that's something that's really missing right now. So I think it's really important what you guys are doing, and I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for having me on. And we're going to keep after it, and hopefully we'll see some growth in the company, or more so with the fighters, but their fighters getting some big fights here. We should have some announcements in the next few weeks with Kasim Uma or Jesse Brinkley, or even our next show, and Brandon Gonzalez after hopefully, knock on wood, he comes out victorious on Friday. But thank you guys so much for having me on.
Hey, brother.
My pleasure, man.
Take care, bro.
All right, guys. Take care.
You too.
But
you know, man, I mean, the Lane brothers are just really down to earth, really cool people and stuff. And Terry, man, really good people. I mean, they're just and the thing, you know what I like about these two guys here is that they're fight fans. You know what I mean? You could talk about any fight with them and they'll sit there and just, you know, conversate with you. It's just one of those type of those set of guys you just can carry the conversation and go, you know what? This guy, we're on the same level. They're trying to make good fights. They're trying to build themselves in this game of boxing. And you got to be supportive. You know, Brandon Gonzalez is a kid right now that I have told numerous people, you got to check him out. You got to see why they're calling him flawless. You know, can he get hurt? Yes. He's being that he's half African-American and half Mexican-American, you could see both traits in this kid's boxing style, which makes him an exciting style to watch. You know, he can box, but then he'll tend to fall into liking the brawl. And that's where he gets hurt, Gabe. You know what I mean? That could be the flaw in his arsenal, is he does like to bang when you decide to step up to him, you know? And he's one of those throwback kids that, hey, I want to fight. I just want to fight. Give me somebody, you know? David Lemieux didn't want to do it. He was very disappointed. Fernando Guerrero, he was really excited. He had called me up and let me know about this. And when it didn't happen, it was all due because of where he's been and what he's done. And he's like, listen, I can't have the opportunities if they're not knocking or they're not giving them to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's the kind of a guy that you just won't be able to ignore, you know. And he's so young, you know, he's still, I mean, this is a lesser, Gonzalez is a step up for him. You know, the guy's got one loss, he's a solid fighter, good boxer. I was really impressed just by watching Brandon, but also, you know, I was watching tape preparing for the interview, but also that, like, I usually kind of ask prospects that are moving to contender, you know, what questions have you had answered? You know, have you been knocked down? Have you been buzzed? Do you think you've been sufficiently tested so that you can go to that next level? And he was really open about the fact that, you know, I've been dropped, I've been buzzed, and I've gotten up and won by knockout, you know, and I've learned from those things. And he recognized all his old, you know, the little flaws and things he had to work on, and really still making that final transition from amateur to pro, which is always hard. You know, it takes time, you know, because there's a lot of things going on. You're getting used to, you know, no headgear. You're used to the size of the gloves, the length of the rounds, but also the level of competition. You're not fighting guys your age anymore. You're not fighting boys. You're fighting men. Mm-hmm. You know, and even if they've got a lot of losses, that's still a man with man strength, with man experience, and on any given night, you can lose. And I just really like the way they brought him along, and it shows that they aren't just some dudes that just started up a promotional company, you know, to live off their dad's name. These are guys that care about the business, know about the business, and are really growing right along with their fighters. And I was very impressed meeting Terry and just how astute he was about the business and what their goals were, and just how classy the guy was, you know. And I was just impressed. You know, I didn't really know much about him, and now I do. And like I said, I think it's important to support the local promoters as much as the big guys, because those guys are the future, you know.
Definitely, you know, and I want to go back with this article that was posted on Leaving the Ring. A few people had posted it up on their websites, and kind of following the story that we broke out. And just to clarify something that even me and Gabe were talking about, what it was Alfredo Angulo was spotted at a Golden Boy event. It was the Khan Madonna fight, and was rubbing shoulders with Golden Boy, and was spotted by representatives of Gary Shaw Promotions, and was approached, and, you know, it was addressed, hey, what are you doing? Since the announcement of Alfredo Angulo, you know, being deported because of the fact he didn't have papers, HBO dropping him, Gary Shaw office had not heard anything since that, you know, announcement. So it was automatically assumed that there is a possibility that, you know, El Perro could be going golden. He could be the golden perro now. Now, we you know, as journalists, we made phone calls. Of course, you know, Gary said, hey, listen, if that's the case, let him do whatever. I'll take it to court. I have a solid contract. Golden Boy were very quick response. I'm talking about, I don't know what, like 20 minutes, Gabriel. Boom, they hit it right back. You know what? We don't know anything about that. Right now, that's speculations. We don't know nothing about that. We haven't heard anything about that. This is from two very resourceful representatives and stuff. But this is what makes sense if Golden Boy was to do this. Now, I'm not talking about loyalty here. My co-host is going to talk about that right now. What I'm talking about, business move here, okay? And the thing is this. Some people are already jumping on the wagon that Alfredo Angulo, El Perro, is signing with Golden Boy. No. Let's not take that out of context here. The article was saying there's a possibility, and this is the reason why. For one is this. It'd be a very smart move for Golden Boy to say, and let's not forget, Oscar De La Hoya did state, I am trying to be the only promoter, right, you know, in the boxing. You know, he's trying to have a monopoly just like the way Dana White has on the UFC, MMA, mixed martial arts world and stuff, okay? Now, taking El Perro and putting him in, right now, unofficially on HBO, Golden Boy is doing a 140 lightweight tournament with the Golden Boy fighters, something that's not new, something that even Top Rank is doing among with his fighters at 135, right, Gabe? He's doing the same thing. Top Rank is having an in-house tournament. The thing is they're not using the word tournament. They're just having their fighters fight. Now, having Angulo takes away any reason of negotiating with anybody that may have a key name in making bigger fights, Angulo being with Gary Shaw, and Golden Boy having pretty much some of the top names, James Kirtland, Danny Jacobs, who lost at 160 but could still make 154, you know, could maybe shed down a few pounds, you know. There's still potential names there to make. Taking Angulo, you can materialize another tournament. It could be at 154 to 160. There is something still there to do. That's why it was intriguing. Angulo did not deny it. Now, we're going to attempt to try to get him on the radio show to maybe talk about it. Now, whether he's going to be truthful about it, we don't know. But we've seen this in the past where you'll see a fighter at another promotional group. And one at the top of my head right now is Omar Henry, but he's not a really huge factor, but he was somewhere, you know, trying to get somewhere with another promoter, trying to get out of a contract that he had with Top Rank. So that's nothing new. I have said it's a great move for Golden Boy, but loyalty, Gabriel, is the other thing that we wanted to try to kind of talk about here.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of it is, and this is your story, you know, you guys are the ones that broke this, you know, like you called it, a rumor, you know. Just kind of saw what was going on and people talked to you. So you're more informed than I am. To me, you know, it's just kind of it's very early to see what's going on. He might just be checking out his options. I don't really know. I'm not that close to his camp at all. You know, I know Clemente, his trainer, and not even that well. But to me, I thought Gary was doing a hell of a job with Angulo. You know, he was on HBO 3 times. You know, they could have had the middleweight title shot if he took the money. You know, it was $750,000, which is not bad to fight for a middleweight title, you know, especially at the level that Angulo was at. And he's got one loss to Kermit Cintron, you know, but he didn't want the fight. He wanted a mil or $900,000. And so he turned it down. To me, if you're going to call a breach of contract with Gary or say he didn't fulfill it, I just don't see that it's there. You know, Gary's done a good job. Now, whether they've built Angulo into a draw, that's another story, because I don't see Angulo filling arenas. I don't see him fighting, like, to me, if I had Angulo, he'd be fighting at the Home Depot Center every fight, you know. And I know that's not, you know, that's a harsh reality to try to do that, because, you know, HBO, their site fee, they're only going to pay a certain amount of money. And you know, he has a deal with Agua Caliente, Gary Shaw, and so they're moving it there. Not a lot of people seem to travel there to go to those fights. I've never seen it, like, sold out there. And it's not, even if it is, it's like 2,000 people, something like that.
Well, see,
whereas
the
Home Depot Center's got 8,000, you know. They haven't really built him that way. But he's getting the dates, which is what, being with HBO, who's got an output deal, that's generally what people accuse them of having, you know, as a lure, is, oh, we've got these guaranteed dates. Well, you know, Gary was doing that on his own without guaranteed dates, because Angulo was an exciting fighter that HBO was excited about. It was just all the deportation stuff and the bad visa that they may or may not have known about, but now that it's in the light, they don't want anything to do with the guy. So it's an interesting situation. Like you were saying, you know, about loyalty, there is no loyalty in boxing. It just doesn't exist. You know, everybody's out for themselves. And you and I have talked about this, that, you know, a lot of people say the fighters are the most victimized. To me, the trainers are the most victimized. They get 10%, you know, from day one. And it's very few guys that are like Freddie Roach or Manny Stewart that make, you know, a good living off that 10%. Most guys are making, you know, if a prospect that's good, generally making a grand for a four-rounder. That's top end. That's a real blue-chip prospect. So then trainer is getting 10% of that to spend, you know, however many hours a day making sure that fighter gets to the gym, training him, sometimes feeding him, being, you know, his daddy, his psychologist,
yep,
his trainer.
Boarding him.
Everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the payday is, you know, not much at the end of the day, you know. And then when, you know, when they get to another level, they may lose that guy. So to me, it's a business, and you've got to do what's right for you. If you think that this promoter is better for you or this trainer is better for you, then that's what you got to do, because the career, you know, lifespan for a fighter, unless you're Bernard Hopkins, is very short. So, you know, I think it all just is kind of case by case, and I'm just curious to see where it goes. You know, it would be interesting to see Golden Boy try to do this. But again, you know, one more point, and I'll shut up, is Gary doesn't seem like he has a problem working with other promoters. You know, so I don't see how. I know they'd get a bigger piece of the pie if they had Angulo all in themselves, but it's not like Gary is holding up fights. And in fact, he's generally looking for a fight with other people and not able to get it because he's got good fighters, you know, and nobody wants to fight him. So there's that.
I don't think I think you're absolutely right. I don't think Gary does have he has not shown that he has a problem working with other promoters. I think what it comes down to is, like you said right now, and a lot of people like to point fingers right away at the promoters, to the trainers, to the managers, but we forget about that a lot of times fighters, they have a mind of their own. They can make decisions, you know. Let's not forget, Gary Shaw was negotiating a very, very sizable deal for Angulo to step in the ring with Martinez, and it was Angulo that said no. I'm not doing that for that amount of money. You know, Sergio Martinez, so that fight there, you know, it fell apart, where Angulo could be going, hey, I'm negotiating. You know, he could be doing his own negotiating right now. He had a fallout with his manager. He's now a free agent in that sense, that he could be saying, look, let's cut out the middleman. Let me go directly to this source where they may offer me a little bit more. And Golden Boy made me looking at it as more of a financial gain of saying, okay, well, we cut out Gary Shaw. We don't have to pay this guy. We don't have to co-promote. Now it's strictly ours, and we can give this kid a little bit more and give him the fights that we think is going to benefit the fighters we've invested in. And they've been doing that. I mean, you know, Golden Boy's been doing that. I mean, they picked up, you know, Paulie Malignaggi.
James Kirkland.
You know, other fighters where they say, you know, we can gain from this, where we can eliminate having other people or other promoters kind of get in the way, where the fighters may think they may be getting a little bit more, but in reality, they are. But Golden Boy is not spending what they would probably have spent before. I don't know. It's one of those things. It's just you got to really sit back as a business. I would not blame Golden Boy or any other promoter company that kind of goes after a particular fighter. Now, whether Golden Boy is doing it, and that's the thing, too. Let's not jump the gun and say, well, Golden Boy is doing this. They have said, I have not heard of anything of that yet, meaning is it true? Is it not? We don't know. But you know what? You might have sparked something that makes a good idea because of the fact that Golden Boy has a great relationship with HBO, and Golden Boy can go back and negotiate, not negotiate, but convince HBO to say, hey, listen, we're picking up on Gulo. We got potential fights. You can go directly to us. Let's make it happen. We can have this in-house tournament, which is doing fantastic right now, at 140. Let's continue doing this and continue having more subscribers. You guys are losing subscribers already, like you've forementioned, and we'll help you out. Why not? That's what I see.
I'm going to call in. I'm going to call in Mr. Molina here in just a second. So just give me one moment, Dave, and I will
go right ahead.
Back.
You know, I'm going to talk about a couple of the New Year's awards and stuff that a lot of fight fans were kind of sending down to me and you know, letting me know who their picks were. Let me see the interesting ones here. I'll tell you the good ones that I liked. There was a couple of good ones and I had put on Twitter and on Facebook and didn't do it on the website here. So I apologize because some folks were saying they were looking for it on the website. They wanted to comment on there. But what they were doing, they were already sending it to leaveitinthering@gmail.com. And I appreciate everybody, too, that were cussing us out because we didn't have a show, prior to the New Year's Eve. A lot of people were looking forward to it. And it just shows the love. Even though you're saying you jerk-offs, you know, I didn't go to this so-and-so party because I wanted to stay, you know, and it just shows the hardcoreness of a boxing fan. So I apologize and all that, but also the love at the same time. You made me feel special just for a few moments and stuff, you know. Then I cracked open the beer and I forgot what I was reading and I went on and doing something else. Anyways, who stinks up the place? Who stinks up the place? And we had 80 votes of Andre Ward. 80 votes on Andre Ward. Which was surprising to me because I'm actually an Andre Ward fan. I actually I've said this on the show before, Gabe. I'm entertained by Andre Ward, you know.
I am too.
And this is the funny thing, is that it's 80 on Ward, and I'll read off the names really quick because I'm not sure if you have our next guest on the line. But
I don't.
I'll give you the next one. The next is number two, the top second one. Was Zab Judah, 73. We had 73 people that said Zab Judah for who stinks up the place. And I was like, you know what? Does he stink up the place or does he just tire out and make you exhausted in watching him because he's getting so tired in the later rounds, you know? So I don't know necessarily if I agree with the first two picks and stuff. Now the third one, which I thought, Gabe, and I might be wrong about this, but I thought it should have been number one, which was 71 picks. 71 people emailed leaveitinthering@gmail.com saying Sergio Mora. I thought that should have been number one. And who stinks up the place? And who's fighting? Yeah, who's fighting on February 4th on a ESPN from a pay-per-view? The guy's been thrown all the way down to an ESPN. Is he the first guy in history that happens for an ESPN?
Nope.
Gets the draw.
Mariela.
Oh yes,
from pay-per-view though.
Chris. Yeah, Chris was not on pay-per-view.
That's like Trent Dilfer winning the Super Bowl and then the next year. Free agent, you're released.
Released,
you're
exactly.
You threw a touchdown in the Super Bowl. You're really not that good. You're gone. I don't know. You know, Mora. I would put. To me, it's number one with a bullet to my head because I just wanted to put a bullet in my head watching that Mosley fight. But Guillermo Rigondeaux, a guy I'm really huge on. A lot of people thought that his last fight was horrifically boring and. I don't really disagree with him as much as I like Guillermo. It was not a scintillating performance, you know. It was not.
We didn't get any
exciting at all.
You know what? We didn't get anything on him on Stinks Up the Place and stuff, but we did get 68 people that voted for Alan Green, who stinks up the place. I say a no-show. Who does the no-show at their most lucrative fights that he should have risen to the occasion? It would be Alan Green. I completely agree with that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of all talk, and then you get there, and it's like, where is the fight? You know, it's all sizzle, no steak. You know, Alan gets a pass. I mean, that last fight was with Johnson was entertaining. I didn't have a problem with it. It wasn't really entertaining because of him. It was more because I couldn't believe, like everybody else, that Glenn was doing what he was doing. It's just kind of crazy, you know. And then he wins by knockout. But with Ward, I think he's going to be one of those guys that people, you know, go back and forth over. You know, it's kind of like Floyd Mayweather in a sense, and that's a guy that Andre really admires. You know, for him, it's all about technique, and it's kind of safety first. Make sure I don't get hit, and make sure I hit the other guy. I mean, it's just basic boxing. And a lot of people aren't going to find that exciting. You know, he's not a blood and guts warrior. He's not going to go out there and try to kill the guy recklessly. You know, he's going to go out there and try to get the guy out of there or beat the guy any way that he can or the way that he sees fit. That's boxing. You know, they can't all be, you know, Marcos Maidana or Jorge Castro and take a lot of punishment, you know, or Margarito, and then come back to win. I mean, it would be the greatest sport in the world if that's how they all were, you know, and we always saw guys just push to the brink and then come back spectacularly, but that's just not the case. You know, everybody's different, and I just don't find Andre boring. I really don't. I mean, it's not the most exciting thing on the planet, but I kind of find it fascinating what's going on in there. It's usually a test of will.
Let me ask you this. Who,
more than anything,
who stinks up the place in your book? Who's the leaving the ring stinks up the place? My pick is going to have to be Sergio Mora.
Sergio Mora. I remember when he was like auditioning to be on the Contender, and I actually pulled for him on the show, and I thought the format was good because, you know, there were like there were compressed fights, and you had to win right now. You couldn't do the long haul. But as a 12-round fighter, even a 10-round fighter, I'm sorry. You know, he may be a nice guy, nothing personal, but, man, I do not want to watch him fight. I just don't enjoy it. Don't want to cover it. That's just me. He may be pissed at me. He may say something.
No
mora.
I don't want to see Sergio the Latin Snake no mora. That's what we call him now.
Yeah.
Okay, now, most impressive of 2010. You know, I'll go off with the least to number five all the way to number one. Let's do it that way, okay? A lot of people, most impressive, number five, okay, a lot of people were throwing out were Glenn Johnson at 19. You know?
I'll be right back.
Yeah, as most impressive, which, you know what, you're absolutely right. Most impressive in terms of like a comeback, but this is not a comeback here. It's just most people were very impressed of what he did in his performance. Number two was Carl Froch. You don't have to agree. He impressed me a whole lot with Mikhail Kessler all the way to Arthur Abraham. He showed intelligence where before he was a straight brute. You got to give him his props, okay? Now, number three is Adner Morris. Absolutely. The kid has shown, you know, he's growing, he's maturing, has the potential of being a star in the sport. He's just, you know, consistently improving for us and stuff. And then you go in number four, which is Sergio Martinez at 204 votes for leaving the ring, Sergio Martinez. Now, number five, which I didn't get, but then again, I'm going to have a lot of Manny Pacquiao fans that are going to send me emails and say that I'm a hater, at 205 votes and stuff. I don't see where he's most impressive. What is? I just was not impressed. If my pick, if most impressive who afford leaving a ring award, I would have to go with Carl Froch, even though Martinez showed a lot of, he's impressed me a whole lot, but Carl Froch, just because he impressed me of him improving and showing that he can adjust. I mean, he can actually fight a lot more intelligent than what he was doing before. But let's go with my co-host real quick. I believe he's got our next guest on the line.
All One of the guys that had one of the most impressive wins, come from behind wins of 2010 against Hank Lundy, a fight that was looking like it was going to go to the cards, and then the big eraser came out in the eighth round, and then he finished it off later on in the fight. Mr. John Molina, WBO, NABO champion. It's NABO, am I correct?
NABO champion.
All right,
what's
man.
Up,
welcome,
brother?
Welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys? How's it going?
Good, man. You know, last time we talked to you, you were in Disneyland. How's everything else going?
Yeah, everything's going good, man. We're just going back to the drawing board and taking care of business.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the whole drawing board here. You know, I know there's a big change in the camp here. Mr. Joe Goosen is no longer going to be on that corner. What kind of narrowed down that decision for you?
You know, to be honest with you, it was just a matter of, you know, I was doing a lot of inside fighting with Joe, and I felt that he taught me everything that I needed to be taught as far as being on the inside, and I thought it was going to be the best move for my career is to, I guess, take advantage of my God-given talent as opposed to, you know, being my height, my reach, my strength, and being able to mix it up and go on the inside and outside. So I felt like the change was necessary, and I think we got the right guys in our corner now, and I'm very excited for 2011.
When you make a change like this here, John, because obviously it comes down to there's a lot of personal feelings, you know. I mean, Joe, when I would see you and Joe, you guys, your relationship looked rock solid. And fight fans right away, they will look at it like, oh, man, this guy's jumping the ship, he's leaving, et cetera, et cetera. But does this to yourself show the maturity of, you know, you have to kind of basically look at yourself almost like a business, you know. You have to do what's best for John Molina.
Absolutely. I mean, it's exactly what it is. It's nothing personal. As far as a personal relationship with Joe, he's the coolest guy. He's the greatest guy to be around. He makes everything comfortable. As far as me being blessed to be able to have the 2 years that I had with him, I think it only made me that much better of a fighter. The stuff that he instilled in me and taught me how to fight on the inside and come forward and be an offensive fighter, I think I couldn't have learned it better anywhere else. But at this point in my career, it's not about staying with somebody because he's my best friend. It's about staying with somebody because they're getting out of you what you think needs to be brought out. And I think at this point it was ready to take the move. It was nothing negative, nothing personal, nothing bad towards Joe. Everything was culture. It's just a matter of me wanting to add a little bit more to my arsenal.
Now, you decided to move on with Mario Morales. You guys are working out of a gym in Whittier. Can you talk a little bit about the decision that went into choosing him and, you know, why you ultimately decided to go with him?
Absolutely. If you guys know Mario Morales and his brother Ruben Morales, Raymond Morales, they, I guess, not so much their claim to fame, but they dealt with punchers. And it's no secret that I'm devastating puncher in the lightweight division. You know, they have Ponce de Leon, who, if you guys have watched his recent fights, his punching and his fighting style has tightened up quite a bit as far as down the middle, boxing from the outside, throwing more than just looking for that D'Artagnan-ish one-punch knockout. You know, being able to, you know, throw the combinations at will and even when necessary in the fight and still possess the ultimate nullifier, which is the power that we possess. You saw the last fight with the late Edwin Villario against Antonio DeMarco, and I think Villario fought a beautifully tactical fight against the right fight against the right guy, and I think that pays tribute to Mario Morales and Raymond Morales, their input and influence on their training camp.
Do you think, how do you guys begin? You told me last night you guys have been working for about a month. Now, footwork, is that where you guys started? Was it balance? Did you guys kind of start over from the beginning, or did he just kind of look you over and say, okay, these are the things I see that we need to fix and start there? How has this process been?
Well, I go there, you got to keep in mind that, you know, thank God I'm number two right now and in the top 10 in every sanctioning body now. And you got to keep an open mind and go in there knowing that they're the teacher and you're the student. If you're too big for your britches, so to speak, you're not going to accomplish anything. You're not going to learn. And, you know, I'm not a dumb kid. I know what my game lacks, and I know what I needed to be to be an ultimate complete fighter. And, you know, so I went in there saying, hey, you guys are the artist on the canvas that's painting a picture. And I got to be honest with you, the first 3-4 days, I mean, I was frustrated as all hell. Thank God it's a private gym. No one could see me because I wouldn't want people critiquing me and looking in and say, wow, what's going on there? But after a week, we caught a rhythm, and it's been a beautiful thing ever since. We've been working well. I feel like I'm a more combination puncher. I'm using my jab a lot more, which I had a lack of. I mean, it's no secret. You go across the board and ask any commentator or any writer, and they'll say, where's Molina's jab? All they look for is that big punch in that right hand, which, like I said, it's no secret. And I think it's better for me to be able to recognize that and go on and learn from it.
You look look over tape and stuff of past fights, and did you have a chance to really look over the Lundy fight, and was that part of your decision? I mean, because as much as you talked about, like, early on, you felt his power, it wasn't there, and you felt like, it's a matter of time, I'm going to walk this guy down. But did you feel, looking back at the fight, that you could have gone about it in a more intelligent way and maybe taken less damage getting to where you got to in that fight?
You know what, I'm going to stick to my guns on that one and say that Joe had the perfect game plan for that fight, and we followed it out, we carried it out to a T, and I believe, you know, we came out victorious. Joe's an offensive kind of a trainer. I mean, if you look at Gabe and Rafael Morales, they came forward, hands up, you know, gritty fights, Arturo Gatti. If you look at Diego Corrales, he's another offensive fighter, where many people would say he didn't use his God-given abilities as, you know, to box from the outside, use all his advantages. He would just come forward and bang it out with you. So with that fight, that wasn't a deciding factor in the fight. I just thought it was something that I needed to make the move now that I'm where I'm at, getting towards the upper echelon of my division. And I feel in order to be a force to be reckoned with, as I am, and to continue to show people what I'm all about, I think I needed to add more ammunition to my arsenal. So I could go over there as a whole complete fighter, going in there 100% confident, knowing that no matter what they throw my way, I'm gonna overcome.
You know, can we? Because you know, I'm gonna do a follow up with Gabe was asking here, John. Coming from a come from behind knockout over Hank Lundy, who just recently signed with Boxing 360 Promotions. After noticing, okay, I was having problems here with a guy that was boxing me. He was having success. I needed to wear him down. I needed to oppose my size and my power, because I even told you when I met you, I was like, wow, how's this guy making the weight? Because you're a big guy, you know. And going back to your, when you're, was it in the locker room? Was it something you had to kind of just, you know, allow to sink in, to go, you know what, I need to make a change? Because a lot of fighters, you know, here, John, and you're absolutely right, very intelligent. Every time you come on here, I enjoy the interview. I've enjoyed speaking to you one-on-one. Really smart kid.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And you know, so a lot of times, like I'm going back, a lot of times a fighter would say, well, you know, he pulled me out of that one there. He got me out of that trench. Let me stick with him. But in your case, you said, you're like, he pulled me out of that trench. But guess what? I don't want to be in that trench anymore. At what point, at what time, what was the time frame when you said, you know what, I don't want to be in that situation again?
You know, it's never about me saying I never want to be in that situation, because let's be honest here, I love to fight. When I go to fight, and I'm not BSing you, man, if I leave it all in that ring that night and I die that night, and God's honest truth, I'm going down doing something I love. And it's almost like I say it with such emotion, because I want you guys to get a better idea, understanding of how I feel about that. So if it comes into a blow-to-blow trench war, I mean, I'm all for it. Let's do it. But at the same time, there's going to be easier ways to win a fight. And I know I have this always in my back pocket to be able to be this possessive or overpowering guy, bully, so to speak, in the ring. I know I have that. I just want to sharpen all the other tools. I think there's so much more that it's almost like an untapped resource that no one knows that what I possess as far as my boxing ability. I think people are in for a great surprise in 2011, and I think they're going to see me using angles, using footwork, using distance, using head movement, you know, not blocking a punch with my head, four times, and when I can move my head, slip the punch, give angles, and move back and forth. I mean, I have that all in me. I just get to show. I think it's just a different layer that people need to see. And I think now that I'm practicing wholehearted with it, I think you guys are going to see a beautiful, beautiful, complete fighter coming in 2011. And with the recent guys moving up to 140, I think at 135, I really, it's going to be hard to see someone standing there with me with my power and my strength and now me adding this whole new layer to my game. I'm very excited about this, very, very excited. But when it hit me was I felt like every time, you know, I'm very blessed. I go to the gym, I get paid to train, I get paid to fight, and this is my occupation. This is how I make my living. But if I go home at night and I look in the mirror and I know I didn't leave it all in that gym or leave it all there, I can't lie to myself and lie to everyone around me who's supporting me and say that I left it all in the gym and I'm 100% humanly, everything I can do humanly possible to be prepared for this fight. I can't lie to myself because it's going to show in the ring and I'm going to end up knocked out and I'm going to wake up and say, well, what the hell happened? So I was doing that for a while. I think I learned as much as I needed to learn with Joe, and I think it was time to make the change. Again, it's not personal. It's a business. It's a cutthroat business. You're here today and you're gone tomorrow. If you're on top and you're winning, everyone loves you. If you lose, you got to fight and scratch and tooth and nail out of the hole that you dug yourself in. So it's the best decision that John Molina could have made for himself and for his team. And I feel like I needed to make that. This is my livelihood. This is how I support my future family. I'm taking it 100% serious. So if I feel at all the least any sense of a change that needs to be made, I'm going to do it. You better believe I'm going to do it.
did this decision come along with also because of the fact that your name is no longer really being thrown out there at 135? I mean, Brandon, Bam Bam Rios, and then you hear Robert Guerrero, even with Cetus, and now you're hearing, Soto, other names like that. Did it in a way you start thinking, you know what, I got to make this change because I'm pulling out of that mix. I got to get myself back into that mix.
You know what? No, we've been stagnant since July. And, the ratings are the ratings, and I'm going to get the fights no matter what. I have a great promotional team in Goose and Tudor. And a lot of those guys that you mentioned are moving up to 140 now. They no longer can make 135. So all that's irrelevant to me. You know, I just want to get it on with the best on 135. You know, get back in the ring on the 28th, stay busy, shake off the rust a little bit. And whoever they put in front of me, man, let's go do it. Let's get it on. Let's give the fans what they want. Let's give them a fight. Like I've always told everyone I want to fight. You know, whoever it is, we're ready. To be honest with you, it's not coming from cockiness, not a Mayweather cockiness. It's coming from a confidence that I know that I am busting my butt day in and day out, and I'm leaving that gym, and I'm getting out of the hills, running the hills, and at night when I go to sleep, I can feel it in my body that there's a change, that I've worked my butt off.
But John, those guys are leaving in the 135. The best are leaving along with that. So do you move up in weight as well?
I do what I got to do at 135. I get that world title, whether it's WBO, WBA, IBF, I get that world title, and I think that validates me to go ahead and throw my name in the hat with the best, and then they're going to have to fight me at 140. But, you know, I'm very content at 135. I'm going to do what I got to do at 135. I want to become more of a household name, and then whoever they want at 140, let's do it. I mean, because the 140-pound division right now is ultra-talented, and I think it's only going to be great for boxing. Shoot, why not a tournament at 140 with the top 7-8 guys out there? I mean, that's going to be it's going to be very interesting.
Absolutely.
I look forward to it. Yeah, it's nice to have you right there in the mix. I mean, and you really, I think, like Soto and Tion probably will get it on again. You know, you still got Robert Guerrero kind of hanging out there. He might move up. I mean, he's a guy that's kind of like you in terms of size. You know, he has room to grow, room to move up. I still think that's a really great fight to be made in boxing. The two of you guys, that's a can't-lose, you know, all-action brawl. And you and Brandon Rios, another guy that's pretty big for his weight class, whether it's 135 or 140, that's another one that you can just say that's a fighter of the year candidate. These two guys are going to go at it until somebody's gone, you know. So
that's why I'm so excited for 2011, man, because whoever they throw me in, I mean, whatever name we draw, the fans are going to really get their money's worth. I'm all for it. I mean, no more tiptoeing around. I'm all for 100% go forward, and let's get it on, man. I'm ready to do it.
Man, you know, cool. I wanted to see, John, I got to be honest with you, man, is, and I just thought that this would be the fight of the year. Well, maybe not to other fight fans, but to me, this was a dream fight, you know, because we all have dream fights. It was to see you and Robert the Ghost Guerrero go at it. That was a fight that I really wanted to see between you guys, you know, and come on, make it happen, brother.
I believe wholeheartedly it's gonna happen. Whether it's here at 140, it'll happen in due fashion. Robert Guerrero is a great fighter. Again, a come forward type style like myself, and we have common opponents that we both fought. You know, and you know he fought a guy to 8 rounds, and it took him 8 rounds to get out of there again in Efrain Hinojosa, and he had to stop it because of an injury to Efrain's arm. And then, again, you can always go back to the Martino Norio fight, who Robert Guerrero knocked out 1 round, and I lost a lopsided unanimous decision, given the fact that I was under the weather. But, I mean, to compare us both fighters, I mean, I think on paper it's a beautiful fight.
It's awesome.
I leave that up to my team and Dan Goose, and I'm very confident that if that's the fight to be made, then that's the fight to be made. But whatever they want, man, and I'm not saying it as an impatient fighter. I'm saying it like, I feel like I almost I got my wings now. It's time to fly.
Hey, man.
That's how I feel.
Well, you know, when I seen you at the Staples, I think you're underneath the Kalisco and Nightmare undercard at the Staples, and I'm sitting next to the publicist of Robert Guerrero. And at the time, we were talking, and he's like, you know, in the 135, I don't see any hiccups. That's what he said to me. Those are exact words. I don't see any hiccups. I see you. You knock out your guy in the first round. And I looked at him. I said, you may not have – I don't think you guys see any hiccups, but I sure in the hell see a goddamn heartburn by the name of John Molina.
Hey, you know,
and I want to see that.
you know who I really like as well, who I think is a good candidate next year that I think you guys will definitely see, I'm more than sure you'll see, is Miguel Vasquez, the IBF title holder right now.
Yeah.
I definitely think you'll see that fight in myself, and then let's go. Like, after that fight, or whoever, I mean, if that fight's made, I'm all for it. If it's Cassidy's, I'm all for it. If it's Robert Guerrero, I'm all for it. I mean, I just want to get this fight January 28th, which we take no one lightly. It's a stay-busy fight. And after that, let's do it, man. Let's give the fans what they want. And if they don't know us, they're sure the hell going to know us after that fight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, all those fights. Let's just have all of those fights.
Like I said, it's going to be exciting, man. The fans are gonna get their money's worth, definitely, especially 135, 140. You got the Tillion, you got Humberto Soto, you got John Molina, you got Brandon Rios, you have Amir Khan at 140, you have Victor Ortiz, you have, even Timothy Bradley, who's a stud, who fought a 10-round unanimous decision over Miguel Vasquez early on in his career. So, I mean, all the guys there are very, very talented, and it's going to be a beautiful thing next year.
And, you know,
I
love
year,
to
I'm
see
sorry.
That. The hippies have Woodstock. Why not make the lightweight Woodstock? That's what I like to see.
Hey, and I'll tell you what, at 135, I got no problem making the weight. So I'm here to stay for 2011 at 135. And at 140, I'm gonna crack that shell next year.
I think that's the big question there, Gabriel, is how are you making 135, man? I don't get where in the hell you're putting it.
My next fight, you guys zoom in on my legs and you'll see the chicken legs and you'll see how I make 135.
Absolutely.
With the Morales brothers, just to add a side note, with the Morales brothers, they're really bringing out a different fighter in myself, and my confidence is beaming right now. I mean, I'm ultra confident in my ability and what I possess. My power is there. He won't tell me who is harder, myself or Edwin Valerio, but he did. The reason why he won't tell me is because he doesn't want me to rely on my one punch power. But after I hit him with the mitts and on the body pads, he said this guy and Edwin Valerio hit exactly alike, and that's as far as he's going to get me. So I'll take that to the bank, man, and take that as a good thing.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, hey, we wish you all the luck, brother.
Hey, on one more side note, recently engaged, so what's up, guys? I'm jumping over to the other side now.
Hey, congratulations, brother. Congratulations,
man.
Hey, you guys, it's always a pleasure.
Hey, John, so did
coming
that
on your guys' show.
So that does that mean you're gonna wear a shirt that has the big S on it since you're engaged now? Because that's what happens to
the
single guys.
I might do the Margarito. Put his fiance or his wife name across the shorts. Now we'll see.
Nice.
All
thanks
right,
so much, John, for stopping by, and always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I wish
you
luck.
Yeah, likewise, guys. Thank
cool,
you, man. Hey, stay tuned, you guys, for 2011. It's going to be big.
Sounds good.
Can't wait.
Have a good one, guys. Bye-bye.
You
oh man, so, it's always, you know, when you hear the younger guys decide to get engaged and get themselves neutered up and all that, it just has to make you laugh because.
What you're laughing about? You're married. I'm single.
Hey. You know, sucker. You know, does anybody in the room have anything to say before these two couples get married? Yeah. Sucker. Well, now, but on the real, man. Hey, congratulations to John Molina. He's always a great guest, man. I love that kid when he comes on. You know, when it comes down to just giving a good overall interview, an honest interview, as much as somebody can give out. He definitely delivers. You know, and I was very surprised and equally impressed. He left Joe Goosen because of the fact that when a fighter does get pulled out of the trenches, when he's definitely had some difficulties. I mean, I don't bite my fingernails very often here, Gabe. I think the last time I was a nail biter when I was like in elementary, you know what I mean? And I was biting my nails. I was, you know, watching this fight. I was at you know, a restaurant eating, rushing everybody to hurry up and eat to get to the house so I could watch it on ESPN2. And it was a great fight. You know, it was one-sided for the first couple beginning rounds. It looked like Lundy was going to pull it off. You know, he was doing his boxing. But John, you know, just continued to keep the pressure on and showed that he is a much bigger, stronger puncher. And now to hear him say, you know what, I got to switch over. I got to, change lanes and do something a little bit different for the Molina Corporation. And you got to sit there and say, okay, there's some intelligence here with this kid. You know, he sees that there was problems in his last fight. He wasn't throwing the jab like he just mentioned.
Here's Ronnie Shield. Just 1 second.
On.
Sorry.
No. And I like that. I really, truly like the fact that he goes, you know what? And he pointed it out. It's no, there is no secret. I don't jab. There's things there to be corrected. And I'm investing, which a lot of other folks have invested in him to try to build out a champion in this kid. So the fact of the matter that he decided to do this on his own, you got to applaud him. Now, whether or not it's going to apply and whether or not it's going to grow or you're going to see any difference. So it's one of the things you got to wait to see. Normally in their first comeback fight with a new trainer, you're not going to see a whole big change in it, you know, but you're going to see some significance or you're going to see that either they're comfortable or they're not comfortable. And speaking about that, you know, like Ronnie Shields here has got, he's got a big task here, you know, with Chris the Nightmare going down to Houston to train with him and Henry Ramirez, taking a step back and saying, you know what, I'm not getting any further here with the with Chris, and he's definitely being a nightmare to my ass because he's not showing up at camp. Let me take him down to Houston and see if we can get Ronnie to obviously do something that he was able to do with Thomas Adamek, who didn't have problems showing up to camp, but definitely showed a lot of improvement moving up in weight. He did some magic there. Do we have our next guest on the line here, Gabe?
We do. Welcome, Ronnie. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing
fantastic.
Thank you,
brother. You know, Ronnie, I got to say, you are one of the leading head coaches that have really grown on me these last 2 years. Where I have to applaud you, brother. I mean, you have shown... I guess, you know, when you start off as a trainer and you've been doing it for some time, you start to show the what you what you're implying, what you're putting on your fighters, and they start to grow with it, and they start improving, and then you start going, oh, now I understand. And that's definitely where I'm at the point with you as a trainer, where I go, now I understand, and now I appreciate what you are bringing to the table. And now you're having another very difficult task. And I think last time we were on the show, Ronnie, I even told you that. I said, man, it seems like you always like to take the biggest challenges when it comes to fighters. And yet again, you're doing it again. Why is that?
Well, you know, everybody deserves a chance, man. And, you know, that's like in life. You know, we all deserve a chance. And I believe in giving everyone a chance. I believe everybody deserves to have a moment in the sun, so to say. And, you know, I mean, look, I don't mind working. You know, I love boxing, and I do. I love working with people who people say ain't shit. That's the people I like to work with.
Right.
You know, because I know, you know, I mean, you know, but just speaking about Chris Arreola, let me tell you something. I've been telling people this for the last few days, that when I first saw Chris, I knew he was going to be the first Hispanic, you know, the first Mexican heavyweight champion of the world. And I just knew that, you know, because he had everything. He had all of the goods, you know, and I told him that, you know. And, you know, and I asked him what happened. And he said, it's all my fault. You know, he said, it's all his fault, you know. You know, and I don't understand that. And I told him I didn't understand that. Because if it's your fault, why is it your fault? Because you didn't train, because you didn't want it, you know. And there's a lot of questions that have to be answered, you know. But that's water under the bridge now. And now it's, so say, a fresh start. You know, Chris is only 29 years old, so it's not like Chris is an old man. You know, if he was like 35 years old or something like that, then you could say, well, you know what? I mean, then I wouldn't even reach out to tackle no task like that. You know what I'm saying? But Chris is a young man. You know, it's not like Chris is an old man. Chris has so much potential, man. I mean, the guy, you know, he could be so good, and he just don't know how good he is right now. So,
you know,
in the gym right now, you know, go ahead.
Well, you know, Ron, you know, when I'm hearing you say, and when you said that everybody deserves a second chance, you know, and I'm pretty sure you remember this, you know, we're up in that age where it's not like this anymore. The kids no longer can go down the block and play. But there was always that one house where there was somebody you would call uncle or an aunt, that they took on all comers. All the kids went over their houses, and they would try to help them out to get out whatever mix they were in. That's kind of how you are, Ronnie, in this boxing game here. When you hear this guy go, it's all my fault. And I was I'm not sure if I was talking to Gable here, my host here, about this, but I was like, you know, Chris, to me, which I'm a huge fan of Chris the Nightmare. A lot of the listeners know that, okay? They can attest to this. But he just reminds me of a guy that has it so good, he can't help but sabotage it. Do you have that sense that's how he is?
I mean, I really do. I really have that sense. But, you know, I talked to Chris just one-on-one, just him and I, nobody around. And, you know, I also seen a different side. Maybe, you know, around a lot of people, when people talk to him, maybe he's a certain way. But when him and I just had our one-on-one talk, you know, I really and truly think this guy wants to make something out of his life, you know. I mean, maybe he could be pulling my leg. I mean, I don't know, you know, but, you know, the thing about it is I told him, I said, look, with me, you have to change. I said, you can't do the same things you've been doing in California, because apparently that's not working. So if you come down here and do the same exact thing that you're doing up there, it's not going to work. That's just plain and simple as that. And I laid it out in layman's terms to him. that he have to understand that, look, everything you've already done has failed because you are not heavyweight champion of the world. You're not, you know, the number one contender in the world right now, you know. So you failed all of that stuff. So now you got to come here and we got to have a fresh start. And from the beginning, everybody always told me from the beginning that Chris is not a morning person. Well, I told him, now you're going to have to become a morning person.
I think that's every Mexican. Hey, Ronnie, it kind of reminds me of us, you know, Cheech and Chong, you know, Mexicans, Americans, we don't like to get up in the morning, but we have to, so we get up really slow.
Oh, that's a good one. I told him, look, if you want to make a run at this thing, you have to change, you know.
Right.
That means simple, you know. You can't get up at 5 o'clock in the evening and say, okay, now I'm going to the gym and train. You know, I mean, what you do all day is rest and sleep and, you know, whatever. And that's not good. You let a whole day go by, and ain't no telling how lazy you're going to be when you get up at that time of the evening, you know, and say, now you're going to go train. I mean, how much effort are you going to put in if you're just getting up, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I had to I changed that, you know, and I reversed everything he's done in California. I reversed it. And now, you know, he's up in the morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing he does is work with the conditioning coach at 6 a.m. You know, tomorrow, I'm going to give you an example tomorrow. Tomorrow, he's getting up, he's running 3 miles at this Memorial Park in Houston, okay?
Right.
As soon as he leaves that, he's going straight to this place called the Wellness Center. The Wellness Center is like a big health club, and they have a swimming pool there. Tomorrow, he starts swimming. It'll be his first day, you know, actually swimming, you know. So, but that's going to be his workout for tomorrow. That's the only two things he has to do tomorrow, and he's doing it back-to-back, the running and then the swimming. He's off for me tomorrow. I give my guys off on Friday. And now Saturday, he has a very hard day on Saturday. And so I told him, I said, look, man, try this. Let's see. This morning, he got up 6 o'clock this morning. He had a very hard workout this morning. Then he went home. Then at 1 p.m., he came to me for the boxing part of it. Hey, you know, we did like about 10, 12 rounds on the pads. You know, no problem. You know, but we worked on things, on improving some of the things that he needs to improve on, which is his balance, you know. And it's like I told Gabe earlier today, you know, Chris is a very strong fighter, but every punch is a knockout shot, man. You know, and he loses his balance. You know, his right hand is good if it lands, but if it don't land, he can't come back with anything else because he's so much off balance that it's pitiful. So, you know, that's another thing that we're working on, you know. Now, you know, mind you, you know, we have 3 weeks. So between now and 3 weeks, you are going to see some improvement. I really believe that. But in certain situations, he's going to revert back, and I know this. I told him this because this is what he know. And I told him, I said, look, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither me training you is going to be built in a day. But I'm going to put a lot of stuff on his mind that I hopefully he carried into that fight, and then, you know, you will see some difference in it.
How long do you think it takes, Ronnie, to make those changes and to have it set in? Is it different kind of with every fighter? I mean, do you find them to be a fast learner? Or do you think because, you know, I remember like when Buddy McGirt took over Gotti, it took a few fights. I think it took about 3 fights for him to really settle down and start boxing. Because once you get hit, like you said, you just revert. So do you think it takes about 3 fights?
I would say it takes about 3 fights, between 2 and 3 fights. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, you got to remember, too, that, you know, we're talking about Chris Arreola, you know. So, you know, if, you know, that, let's say after this fight, everything goes well after this fight, then we get another fight. Well, you know, it depends on now, you may get a big fight, you know, or whatever. You know, and I think if they're going to do the right thing by him, you know, they have to look at everything. You know, I think they have to look at the big picture and say, okay, let's get Chris maybe 3 fights with Ronnie, and then say, okay, now we put him in a bigger step-up fight. You know, not say, okay, they offered him $1 million or $2 million to fight, you know, David Haye or whatever, you know, and then throw him in when he's not ready yet, you know.
Right.
You know, it's not to say that he won't be ready, but you know, but I'm just saying, give me an opportunity to get him to use the system that I'm trying to install in him to put, you know, so we can have an opportunity to win.
You so know? Really, right now, you almost kind of throw out, like, the Quezada fight, and you say, okay, that rebuilding process is over. This is a brand new one. We've got a new trainer. We're just going to move forward from here, as opposed to, okay, well, he had the Quezada fight. He looked good in this fight. Now he's ready. You think it's going to take a few fights for it to really settle in?
Exactly.
And really, nothing's going to happen if the culture in between fights, which is, I think, his real danger zone, doesn't change. I mean, it doesn't do any good for him to go and get in shape with you and then go eat, you know, my weight.
Exactly.
And then put it back on, you know?
Right. Well, that's one of the things, that we talked about also. And you know, the conditioning coach gave him a pretty good diet plan for him. You know, not diet, but, you know, he gave him a list of food that he should eat at certain times of the day. You know, and after the fight, it's like I told Chris, I said, look, okay, take a week off. And don't say, okay, I'm going to just go crazy with eating, you know, I got to put the weight back on or whatever. You know, don't go, continue to eat right, okay? You know, I mean, I know you're going to have a few coronas or whatever. Okay, that's fine. But after the week, start back running. Start back doing some kind of conditioning. Because I told him, I said, the next fight, I say, I need at least 6 weeks with you. But don't come to camp to get in shape. Get in shape. Come to camp so I can just start the game plan right away. You know what I'm saying? Don't come to camp and I got to take 3 weeks to get you in shape and then I only have 2 to 3 weeks for us to work on a game plan. Because if you're not in shape, then that's a problem.
Right.
That's a huge problem when you don't come to camp in shape. And, you know, and I told Chris this today. I learned that from Evander Holyfield. When Evander Holyfield used to come to me right away, if the first day I said, go 10 rounds, I can go 10 rounds with him right then and right there in the ring. You know, he could box 10 rounds right away because, you know, he came to camp in shape. So I could just start on the game plan right then. I don't have to wait 2 to 3 weeks to say, okay, now I can start on the game plan because now you're in some kind of condition to where we could start working on it, you know? And I told him, you got to help yourself. I say, you know, I can only do so much as a trainer. The fighter is all on you on whether you want to do this thing or not. If you want to do this and you're serious about this, then come to me in shape. Don't come to me out of shape.
Go ahead, Dave.
Really quick, I got Gabe. I got really big, quick questions here, and Ronnie, I want to kind of go back and do a follow up what Gabe was talking about with the game plan of, you know, the Quezada fight and having a couple of those kind of fights before rushing into a big fight. You know, now when you as a head trainer. As a trainer, seeing this, and this is the game plan that you're scripting up, and you're saying, okay, this is what we need to do to get you back on track. I'm wondering, though, because regardless of what your game plan is, it's always the people that invest in their fighter as a promotional or management, their interest and their time frame could be a little different than yours. was there any time of a sit down and saying, look, if you're asking me to now take over and to mold this guy into what you guys were foreseeing in the future and what you thought that you had as a product here, we need to go off of my plan. In other words, we can't go off of your guys's because the turnaround is not going to be what you're hoping if you decide to rush it. Are they on the same page with you?
Well, to tell you the truth, no, because we haven't had that conversation. You know, and I haven't talked to Dan Goosen. The only person I've talked to was Al Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and we only talked about this fight, you know. So I think, you know, I think maybe they want to wait until I get to California and we sit down and talk about it, you know. Maybe that's what they're waiting on. But they haven't called me and say, well, you know, what is your time frame for us putting Chris into a big fight? You know, I haven't gotten that yet, you know. And like I say, and that's one of the issues that I was going to bring up when I did get to California, because then I know everybody will be there, and we can sit down and say, look, this is what we have to do, you know. Of course, I have to listen to, you know, what their plan is.
Right.
But they, as the trainer, you know, it would seem to me, though, that they would come to me and say, look, you know, we know you just started with him. You know, okay, we're going to evaluate and see what it looked like this first fight. Well, you know what? You gave me 3 weeks, okay? You know, you gave me 3 weeks.
Right.
So you can't really evaluate a guy in 3 weeks because, you know, I mean, that's not, you know.
Realistic.
That's not cool to do that.
Yeah,
it's not realistic.
It's not realistic.
Turn him around. It's not realistic. I'm going to turn him around in 3 weeks.
I mean,
I'm doing the best I can right now to try to, you know, straighten out some of the things that personally I saw, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I told Chris earlier, I said, look, man, you know, I've never had to study Chris because I never had anybody fight him. I said, but when I studied you to fight Tomas, I've seen so many flaws in you. I say, man, Tomas, all you have to do is box him. You know, and, you know, and Chris told me the other day, he said, man, you know what? When I fought Tomas, I was expecting him to sit there and trade with me because that's the way I seen him fight.
Right.
I said, well, Chris, that's before he was with me. I say, look, I trained him. I say, there's no way in the world he could stand up to you. Nobody.
Right.
You know, I mean, even when he fought Klitschko, Klitschko wasn't crazy to say,
yeah,
hey, okay, I'm going to go punch for punch with you.
I mean, we saw Klitschko fight almost like a featherweight, you know, that night.
Absolutely.
He was on his toes.
Absolutely.
He was on his toes using that whole ring. He did something that
right.
a lot of us would not expect in a giant to do, you know. I completely agree with you on that one here. And going back about being realistic, I think we were talking about that because John Molina is having a change of trainer, Ronnie, is that you don't really see the change or the influence that a trainer is going to implement on that fighter in a short time of period. It takes either 3 to 4 fights to see that change unless that fighter is willing to dedicate themselves. And right now, tell me if I'm wrong, Ronnie. I think you're brought in to kind of tweak up the factor he's not a disciplined fighter, and they needed a change into getting them away from distractions. Am I right about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You're 100% right about that. And, you know, but I think right now I give Chris a lot of credit because he did leave California. You know, I was told before that he would never, ever leave California, you know. You know, even when he went to Big Bear, he didn't like that. He got on, you know, he left for about a week, you know. I mean, this is the stories I've heard, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, and I think he took a giant step coming to Houston. I mean, I really do. And, you know, I'm not going to give him the credit yet until we fight because, you know, at any minute he just pick up and leave, you know. So, but I think he took a step in the right direction. Now, you know, and if we can keep it that way. And, you know, I think – Chris don't need a whole lot of discipline. I mean, I don't think any fighter needs a whole lot of discipline. It's just, look, once you get him in the habit of doing things, I think he's going to be fine. Because, okay, this is what he know he has to do. But with me, you know, I tell him straight up, you know, look, I'm a straight up kind of person. You ain't going to fool me. You ain't going to show me nothing I've never seen before.
Right.
I've seen it all. I've heard it all. I've done it all. So you're not showing me nothing new. And I think he needed to hear that. You know, I really do believe he needed to hear that. So, you know, and right now, I'm very satisfied with how things are going. Henry is a great guy to work with. You know, Henry tell me a lot of stuff. You know, when I ask Henry questions about certain things, you know, he tell me straight up. You know, he don't try to sugarcoat it. He tell me exactly the way it's been, how it was, you know, and he do it right in front of Chris. And Chris say, yeah, yeah, I'm a big heifer, you know. he tell me. Yeah.
If I could jump over real quick, I don't want to keep you all night here. I know you had a long day.
I'm good, man.
You have two other fighters I'm really interested in. One's fighting next week, Arislandi Lara, right?
Yes.
Can you just break down that fight with Delray Lanes for us? And where do you think his progress is? Is this the year that he really breaks out as a contender?
I really believe that, man, because, you know, let me tell you something about Lara, man. Lara is a good boxer, you know. But, you know, when I first got him, you know, he was, you know, I mean, like the Cubans, they like to sit back, they like to box, they like to do this, they have to do that. But, you know, it's like I told Lara, I said, look, man, you have to do something different. You know, you have to start picking up the pace with these guys because, you know, he's a strong, he can punch too. Lara's a good puncher. But he's just known as a boxer. So I said, look, man, you know, we have to pick it up. Well, you know, the thing about Lara is now, you know, if you see him now, and you know his last four, well, his last three fights have been knockouts. You know, his last three fights have been knockouts. So, you know, because you know right away, I'm making him jump on these guys right away using his, you know, he's a heavy-handed fighter. So he can hurt you, you know. And I love the Cubans. I love the way they go to the body, man, because they go to the body like like nobody else, you know. So you know, and with their power hand, a lot of fighters only do it, you know, with the opposite hand. But these guys go with their power hand to the body a lot, and you know, and he, like I said, the last three fights, he had three knockouts. So you know, and this is what we're getting ready for now. On our Friday, next Friday night, you know, on the 14th, you know, we're going in to knock people out now, you know, to show people, look, okay, this guy is not a top-tier fighter. So this is the way we have to treat him. He's not supposed to go the distance with me. So
right.
You know what? We got to get him out of there. And that's the attitude that this kid is taking. And he knows it, you know. He knows, he realizes one thing. Look, in order for me to get up there with the upper echelon fighters at junior middleweight, I have to make a name for myself. So this is what he's doing now.
Do you think it was, because he really on was, he really caught my eye because I like southpaws, and but two, he seemed really technical, but he was blowing people out pretty early, and then I think it was the Grady Brewer fight and Danny Perez, he seemed to kind of level off a little bit. I think there was a fight before that too, Perez, Luciano
right.
Perez, and he seemed to kind of level off. Do you think he was like fighting down to his competition, kind of comfortable, I can win, and not really risk too much? And that was kind of the thing, was you just kind of had to, kind of like Manny Stewart does with Vladimir Klitschko, just like, look, you know, you're on TV now, and you got to step it up, dude. That's kind of the thing. It's nice to see him rebound, and really, he's had like three first-round knockouts in a row.
Absolutely.
Where do you see him by the mid to end of the year? Do you think he hits contendership, goes for a title? So that division seems pretty wide open.
Absolutely, and you know, and that's the thing we're doing now. You know, speaking with Golden Boy, you know, not too long ago, you know, their plans are within the next three fights for him to be fighting for world title at least by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'll be fighting somebody for the world title by the end of the year, and. You know, he's really excited, man, and You know, he's kicking off the year, and he's been busy. That's a good thing. They have been keeping him busy, you know, because I stay on him all the time, man. Look, you know, this guy needs to keep fighting, you know. And so they finally doing the right thing and putting him in, you know, just to stay busy and, you know, hopefully, you know, I mean, but nobody will fight him. You know, they offered Angola, no. You know, or they offered that big mouth Farnes Matarosa, no. You know, they offered a bunch of other guys, you know, and everybody said no. You know, they don't want to fight him now. So, but you know what? Sooner or later, you know, they're going to wish they had fought him when he wasn't as good as he is now.
Now, your other southpaw, who's a pretty good fighter himself, Guillermo Rigondeaux, I know he's got the fight set up with Willie Casey. Has he come into camp yet? Have you guys begun work on that?
Not yet. He's not in camp yet. He should be coming pretty soon, though. I'm expecting him within the next couple of weeks. You know, with Guillermo, you know, I think, you know, it was a lot of pressure put on Guillermo, you know, when he fought the last fight against Cordova. You know, for this guy, you know, his seventh fight fighting for interim title, you know, I mean, it was a lot of pressure. And I think I put a lot of pressure on him, too. And I think we all did, you know, he's top ranked. I think they really, really put a lot of pressure on him, but, you know, with, you know, just bragging about him and, you know, just so much publicity and, I don't think he lived up to what we all thought he should have been.
Right.
So we have to go back now and look, we find a guy that's, what the guy is like 11-0 or something like that.
Yeah, 7 knockouts.
So what we have to do is, I mean, I haven't even got the tapes of the guy yet, but I haven't seen him, so I can't say what kind of style this guy has or whatever. But, you know, it shouldn't even make a difference. Guillermo is one of the best fighters in the world, and now he has to get out there and he has to prove it now. You know, everybody been talking. Now it's time for him to get out there and prove it. And, you know, this camp, I'm a totally do a 360 on the camp. I did a different camp last time with him, but this camp is going to be much harder for him.
Well, how so? Just stepping up the sparring?
Stepping up his punch count. Stepping up his punch count, number one. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, this kid is a great boxer, man. But, you know, we need to throw more punches, you know. And, you know, he needs to throw more combinations and – because this kid can punch with both hands, man. He can punch with both hands. And this is what we have to do. You know, I think he's more worried about going the distance than anything right now because, you know, he's such a virgin to going 12 rounds.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that was his first 12 round, and after about 8 rounds, he just, like, I think it freaked him out that, hey, I still got 4 more rounds to go, you know. So
there's not that confidence there yet of just
right,
like,
exactly.
He doesn't know what it feels like to have more energy going on.
Exactly. So now I think you know he has a little bit. Now he knows what to expect. You know, in the last 4 rounds, he knows what kind of energy now that you know because it's so different in training because with the headgear and all that stuff on, it's just so different. But now he knows what it's like when you have the small gloves on and that you have to go these last 4 rounds really different like you did the first 4 rounds, you know. The last 4 has to be like the first 4. So now I think, you know, he knows that and, you know, I think he's going to be better equipped for the next fight.
Awesome. I look forward to it, man. I was really high on him. I was kind of one of those guys that was really touting him and then, you know, the fight was less than spectacular, and everybody was all of a sudden down on him. Like, I thought you said he was going to be fantastic and this and that. And to me, it's his seventh fight, man. You know, I think it really comes down to that. He's still, you know, you can
absolutely
have 400 amateur fights and be great, but the pros is
right.
A whole different game, you know.
It is. I think he realizes that now, and I think he really knows that. But like I say, you know, I told him, you know, right after the fight, I said, look, the next camp is going to be completely different. So I say, you know, now you know what it's like to go 12 rounds. But you know what? You know, the next one shouldn't go 12 rounds. You know, he shouldn't, because he's too good of a fighter to get in there and move around so much without throwing punches, you know. This is not the way, you know, we did it in the gym. So, you know, this is not the way we have to fight the next fight. We have to, you know, he has to really just show, you know, because a lot of pressure is on him now because, look, once you start fighting upper echelon fighters, you can't go back and say, okay, now I'm fighting, I'm going to go back down to C-level fighters. No, you can't do that. You know, once you step up there, you got to stay there. That's what boxing is all about. And, you know, and after this fight, you know, he's going to have to fight somebody. He's going to have to fight one of the champions. You know, and I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And he's going to have to compete with those guys. So, you know, he has to get that in his head.
Yeah, it's kind of now or never.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Ronnie. Always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I could talk to you all night. You know, first of all, we're running up against the clock here. But, Dave, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to ask just one more question, Ronnie, before we let you go and stuff like that, because I'm just curious. Fighters of your stable from the past, are they still active? From Juan, the baby bull, can you give us an update, or even like Kermit Cintron?
Yes. Okay, the baby bull is training right now. He's been missing it. He's been having some groin pains, you know, and he's been, man, he came in the gym 2 weeks ago. He said, man, I need you to get me back in the gym right now, you know. So he's been very active in the gym for the last 2 weeks. We have nothing planned right now, but, you know, he misses it, you know. So, you know, he took his test, you know. He took the LSAT, and, you know, he just said, man, you know what, now I just want to concentrate on my boxing. So he's back in the gym, and, you know, he's ready to go. Kermit Cintron, I spoke to him earlier today. He's ready to come back. We're looking for him for a big fight in May, you know. And so, you know, I mean, I don't have names right now, but, you know, but I know who he wants to fight, either the rematch with Paul Williams or he wants to fight Andre Brito. So, you know, we're down with either one of them. You know, so, you know, one of them has to step up. Somebody has to step up. But, you know, who knows, you know, until the manager get a fight, you know, but he'll be back down pretty soon.
You know, I mean, Ronnie, I'm not going to lie to you because I respect you a whole lot. I seen you at the Beaker. You know, in Oakland, and I came up to you and I said, hey, it was, you know, great fight. The game plan was there. That was the game plan that we had talked about on the radio show. It just didn't work. So going back with Kermit Cintron is that I've had some very wise cracks about him, among other fight fans, you know, because of the whole jumping out of the ring here and stuff. But I got to tell you something here, and I was even telling Gabriel, I was telling a few fight fans about this. I said, as much as we joke about Kermit Cintron, this guy, he fights everybody. He is not shy about fighting everybody. You know, we look at superstars, guys that are the top of the elite. We call them top of the elite. Where right now, in their pinnacle of their career, they cherry pick, you know. And one fight fan said,
absolutely,
well, Kermit Cintron has to fight. I'm on, does he have to fight the big names? Couldn't he just kind of coast the way that Camacho Jr. has done in his career? Does he try to does he have to go after the big names and be the underdog? I don't know. I know some fight fans are gonna be like, oh, Dave, you know, Ronnie's on. I'm just saying, it's just food for thought, you know. As much as we like to joke about what has been going on with Kermit, and that's what it is. It's all fun in games, you know, when we do talk about it. But if you really look at the guy's career, I don't think you can really criticize Gable. Am I wrong? Can we really criticize the amount of oppositions he decided to take on?
No, I think Kermit's always taken on good, good opposition. I mean, he wants Andre Brito, and Andre is acting like, you know, who has he fought? It's like, well, his resume, you know, you can take a portion of it.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know. Like you were saying, Ronnie, you can't go back once you get a title. Well, unless you're Andre Brito, you know, then you can kind of keep fighting whoever, you know, and that's
right.
you've been in this business long enough. You know that there's rules for one guy and different rules for another guy, and that's just the way it is.
That
fight's at the top of my list. I'd love to see Berto versus Cintron. And speaking of Cintron, I mean, the last we saw was that crazy fight with Paul.
Right.
I scored it for Cintron, even though you and I both know if it was under the right rules, it would have been a no contest.
Exactly.
Have you guys talked about that fight? And I mean,
absolutely.
Do you have any trepidation about? Most fans are like, well, if you fight, there's got to be a stay in the ring clause and all that kind of stuff. do you guys talk about what happened?
We do, man. We talk about it. We laugh about it. We joke about it. The thing about it is when I watch it, I think you start with the punch first. It all started when he hit Paul with the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got into the clinch. Now, Paul is the one that flung him around. And his momentum, nobody looks at the ropes, And every time now I go to fights, and it's not my job to go and look at ropes and have them tighten ropes up and stuff like that. But, I just want somebody sent me a picture of those ropes at night. And I'm telling you, man.
I remember you talking about that. Yeah.
I'm going to get that picture, man. I'm going to get that picture, And when I come to Chris's fight, okay? Well, matter of fact, next week, when I come to Palm Springs, are y'all going to be in Palm Springs next week?
Actually, I was just thinking about it. I think I am going to be in Palm Springs next week.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to find that picture, man, and I'm going to show you a classic picture. Okay, I'm gonna show you a classic picture, and you're gonna be like, okay, now I see. The ropes are there. That's what the ropes are supposed to be a gift for, so you won't go out of the ring. But those ropes are so loose. They were so loose that if you had any kind of momentum, it's not gonna stop you. And I'm telling you, it's really and truly, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good at all.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I mean, but for
but,
you...
The thing for me is, because I didn't want to run over there after he went out the ring. I didn't want to run over there and get disqualified. So I'm sitting there, and then I'm trying to talk to the referee. And then finally he tell me, he said, look, the doctor stopped the fight, so now you can go over there. So when I got over there, all I could hear was, let me up. I'm okay. Let me up. I'm okay. All I hear the doctor saying is, no, we can't. We can't, for safety reasons, we can't let you up. We have to put you in an ambulance. And he said, why? I'm okay.
For you, he wanted to keep going, right?
Yeah. But that's what I heard. That's all I can tell you I heard.
Right.
And Kermit's doctor was right there. And I heard Kermit's doctor talking with the doctor. And the doctor said, you might have punctured your lung. And so Kermit's doctor said, how do you know he punctured a lung and you haven't touched him? You haven't evaluated him. You ain't did anything. And the doctor said, look, we have to take him to the hospital to do that. That, to me right there, was crazy. That was crazy. But
I think the whole,
you,
that whole
he's okay, he's trying
scenario.
To get out.
Yeah.
But
I think that whole scenario.
That came out a few days later and then blamed it all on Kermit and said that Kermit said he couldn't,
Right.
Which I thought was strange. It's like, why not, if you're going to set the record straight, press row is just right about 10 feet away, or 50 feet away, whatever, the other side of the ring. Come on over and let us know what's going on. It just seemed
they
strange.
They wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Isn't that the same doctor, too, that it took him how many days to even respond about that, Gabe? I can't remember that.
It was about 2 days, something like that.
Yeah. It took him a few days to even bring it up and all that. But
I guess just the main question is just you don't have any trepidation training him, getting into that situation. You don't think this is a guy that's going to fold or quit or look for a way out?
Not at all. But trust me, when you see Kermit Cintron fight, he's not going to fight a Joe Blow. he's going to fight somebody, either a champion or somebody that's in the top tier of his weight division.
Cool.
Well, there you go.
He's not going to be like Andre Breton. He's not like Andre Breton. He's not like him who try to find, you know, and the thing about it is, see, Kermit can fight at 47 and Kermit can fight at 54. You know, today he told me he weighed 157 right now because you know what he's doing? He's working out. He's doing his condition. He's staying in shape. And when he comes to me, you know, because I've been told him the same thing. When you come to me, don't come to me out of shape. You come to me in shape. I want to go straight into the game plan. I need 6 weeks and just come straight to me, and I can just go straight to the game plan. And that's what
right.
he does. You know? And, you know, and I commend Kermit for that because everybody doesn't do that.
Yeah, that's – he's never seemed – I've seen him, you know, between fights. He's never out of shape. He's a guy that he seems to really enjoy working out and – He lives a clean life, you know, when he's away from the ring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, cool, Ronnie. Ben, you've almost been on about an hour, so we'll let you go. I really appreciate it, man. It's always fun talking to you. It's always enlightening, and hopefully I'll see you next week in Palm Springs.
And, man,
okay,
it's always great.
I'm going to try to find that picture for you, too.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Thank you, Ronnie. We appreciate it, man. You have a good night, brother.
All right, man. You guys take care.
All right.
He crushed me up.
You know, luckily we let him off and all. I had like five more questions for you, Ronnie. You know, I enjoy, you know what? Yeah, I have to admit, I was not a big fan of Ronnie Shield as a trainer. I even criticized him 3 years ago when we started Leaving in the Ring, where I just did not agree with anything that he was doing. And he kind of just grew on me, you know, where now I look at particular things that he does as a trainer where I'm like, okay, I get it. Maybe it's an age factor. Maybe it's the pace that you have to look at how he decides to mold his fighters into. And a lot of times, too, you have to grow in this game, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, Gabe, is that you have to grow with this game. When you decide to really study the sport, you have to have a certain temperament of patience and looking at particular things. As, for instance, Ronnie really does take a lot of underdog fighters. He takes on a lot of fighters that you could easily say can be tossed into the trash. Ronnie takes them, and he tries to either rebuild them, get them back into a form where they can be a contender in stature. And when you have a trainer that does that, and he said it himself, you're not going to see the results right away. You have to give it time. And in the beginning, I would see him get a particular fighter, and I would go like, man, well, I don't see nothing. There's nothing there. It hasn't changed. And you criticize and you blame the trainer. And in reality, it's the time you have to blame. It's not the trainer. It's not the fighter. It's the time frame. 3 weeks is not enough. 6 weeks is not enough. The relationship is barely even building after 3 to 6 weeks. You know?
Yeah, it just... Every time I talk to him, I kind of learn something new, and just the way he broke down, you know, the different things that Chris does. You know, we were talking earlier today too, and you know, just the way he described his right hand and how his whole body kind of comes with it, and the way his feet are placed when that happens, and you know, and then what happens afterwards. You know, like one of the things we were talking about was it's something that Guillermo Rigondeaux brought up to me was that. The difference between American and, in his case, Cuban trainers
right.
is that in America, and this is something I actually asked Ronnie about today because I was like, you know, a lot of the trainers I've worked with, they don't really deal with the feet too much. Maybe they'll
the
say,
footwork.
You know, there's a little,
right.
yeah, a little bit of spacing here is a little different because I do, you know, my base is kind of Jeet Kune Do at this point, and then I kind of box off of that. And the footwork's like slightly different by inches and just where you kind of place your feet. But the difference with the Cubans and with what Ronnie does, and where he fits so well, I think, with Cubans, is he starts from the feet and works his way up. And a lot of American trainers, they start with, okay, you're going to learn your jab, and then your right hand or your power hand that's coming from the rear, whatever that is. And then we'll move to the hook and then all the other punches. And the footwork isn't really where they start. And where Ronnie begins and where Rigondo began was the feet.
Right.
And that really, you know, Bruce Lee called it like it's a vehicle that moves the arsenal around. And
exactly.
What good is it to throw a punch if you don't have proper balance and you don't know where you're going to next? And
well,
if you throw that punch, you know, and you're like leaning over your body, you're screwed. You're wide open for a number of counters and you're going to get knocked out.
You know, the thing is so true, you know, and a lot of trainers, they want that thumping style. They want that style of power where they forget that the footwork is what really honestly generates everything that you're looking for. They want to see the hand speed. They want to see the accuracy where they forget that. That's where it comes from. It's the footwork. Footwork is one of the most difficult things to master. The old timers, that's what they would do. They wouldn't even throw punches. What they would do was move their upper bodies off of the footwork before throwing punches. They would watch themselves in the mirror, you know, way they would maneuver their footwork, because wherever your foot would land, that's the position of you wanted to either throw or pivot to counter. You see it now. I see kids right now that come into the gym, have very heavy hands, but they drag. And this is very common here, Gabe, and I'm pretty sure you've seen this at the Fortune Gym to the Wild Card. They drag their back foot when they jab. So they can't pivot. They can't maneuver. They're not mobile at all because their back foot, it's almost like they're dragging it through mud or through sand. They don't know how to lift it. They don't know how to reposition themselves. They don't even know how to pull back. When you watch like Floyd, and this is another thing. A lot of people are like, man, Floyd's defense is so beautiful. It's graceful. Watch his footwork. His footwork has a lot to do with it. His hand speed, it is there, but it has a lot to do with his footwork. You know, same thing with Matt
Hopkins against Pascal, dude.
It
was a master class in footwork. You could see the little short slide steps. You know, he would kind of faint in with it, bounce in and out. His footwork was just impeccable. If you want to show a young kid, like, this is how you do it, you know, if you want to show a guy, like, this is how you box, that's a great tape right there. Invest in the body, you know, and footwork
and always be in position. See, that's the thing there. You know, Bernard was always, you know, even though in the beginning of the round he was getting dropped and it said, you know, it took him a while to get the blood to circulate and stuff. But once you get it, your feet always have to be. Good footwork will always allow you to be in position to counter, to move, to slip, to return. There is so much. Everything's based off of the footwork, and that's something that a lot of American trainers have just lacked because of the fact that turnaround in gyms, and I think this is the thing here too, Gabe, we go back into business, and I've spoken to a lot of business owners in gyms where they say, well, the turnaround, Dave, you know, you gain 2, but you lose 6 in a day. You know, so they look at it, people come in, they want action. I see kids that haven't even trained for a month and they're sparring. And I think that's just downright stupid. You know what I mean? Where they haven't even prepared themselves with the fundamentals of learning how to receive a punch, you know, or knowing that there's a punch coming directly at your face, you know, and it's just because of the fact that people are catering to what our society is used to now, which is fast pace. Let's get it out there. That's why you're seeing now promoters do exactly what gyms are doing. They're just pushing out everything and fast product and not worrying about if it's going to be durable product. It's going to be everlasting product. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but.
Well, I think that was kind of the same way. I wasn't, you know, I think as you just move along in this business, you start to really understand. And you know, boxing is kind of like a, I guess like anything, it's kind of a rabbit hole. You know, it doesn't really have an ending to what you can learn. You know, Bernard Hopkins is a guy that'll tell you he's still learning things about himself as a fighter. You know, even though he's got a PhD in boxing, you know, he's just an absolute master. And there's still always more to do, and it always kind of amazes me. Like, you look at a guy, and I hate to pile on, but Jeff Lacy, there's a guy that got to a certain level, he just stopped learning or something went wrong. And you wonder, like, how the hell did this guy get to this level where he's fighting Joe Calzaghe? And he was kind of a basic fighter, not a lot of head movement, no plan B, I'm just going to blow you out. And there was a huge gap to me between prospect, and then he just made the leap into a title holder and didn't, there wasn't that middle ground. And it's kind of what I wonder about with Andre Berto is, you know, he's got that belt. And as soon as he did, like Ronnie said, there's really no going back. Now you've got to step up and you've got to fight the other guys, and he hasn't. And that's been the big knock on him. But at the same time now, he's stuck with who does he fight? And he doesn't seem – he says all the right things in terms of, you know, well, if they want to make that fight, we'll make the Cintron fight. To me, that's very safe. It's like, you know what? A guy calls me out and says all those things about me, and if you look around, there's not a lot of names that you can make your bones against right now. Why not fight Cintron? I don't see that fight as a step back. I think Cintron's a much more quality guy than we've had a chance to see, and – you really look at Paul Williams' next fight, where he gets knocked out after Kermit. You know, I think that it's very possible. You know, before they're like, "Oh, Paul didn't get hurt at all; he didn't get wobbled." And I've had a few people say that. I'm sorry, they were actually perfectly profiled to me and on my side of the ring when that right hand by Cintron landed flush. His legs buckled. I don't care what anybody says. He maybe wasn't on Queer Street. He wasn't, you know, about to go out. But he was hurt. He felt that punch. And I thought Cintron boxed as well as I'd ever seen him at that level that night. You know, he was, to me, what I was watching was his best performance. And then he leapt out of the ring or, you know, got thrown off balance, however you want to look at it. You know, what happened. But to me, they got away with one in there. And if that would have been a no contest or if Cintron would have won, we'd have saw that rematch again.
Right.
You know, but we're not gonna. You know, I don't think they're interested in fighting that fight. And probably because not just that moment, but because how hard it was to make the fight with Cintron in the first place. If I were Dan Goosen, I'd be reticent to make that fight because
the venue itself, you know, didn't really sell out. There's a lot to do with that, of trying to make that fight happen again.
It was in the wrong venue, man.
It was wrong venue. Exactly.
In Atlantic City. Exactly. I don't understand why that happened, but that's...
Yeah, I completely agree with you and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, Gabe, let's finish up our New Year awards here. You know, because we only have like about 30 more minutes before the show is over. We might as well just get this done and over with. I'm going to go with comeback of the year, okay? And we'll go off from the third. We had five, but I say let's go with three, most mentioned. And the number three was comeback of the year was Zab Judah. This was voted by 79 by fans that emailed leaveitintheRing@gmail.com. 79 people have said Zab Judah. They thought that he made a comeback of the year. He was successful. And like I said, he has been showing some consistency. And, you know, there's an argument there, comeback of the year. Number two, and I really like this one here. I thought I was in agreement with this one here, which is 133 by fight fans. Mr. Glenn Johnson of comeback of the year, because at one point, a lot of fight fans were ruling him off and thinking that, okay, he might have caught up with age here. What can the Road Warrior do except for be roadkill? And he showed exactly what he can be by sparking up the interest into the Super Six when he decides to dismantle Alan Green. Comeback of the year, I do like with him. But number one at 205 was Bernard Hopkins. stepping in to finish off the year in December against Sean Pascal. Fantastic. Well, you know, it was a draw, but a lot of us consider it was a fantastic win for him. Really quick, Gabe, what is the comeback of the year?
That's kind of close because you go, you know, Hopkins' win wasn't, and I kind of consider him to have won that fight. I don't see Pascal winning. It's certainly not a. It could have been a draw, but you know, to me, I could make a case for Hopkins winning in a draw, but not a Pascal win. You know, bottom line, it's a close fight. But at the same time, then you look at Glenn Johnson's win, very decisive win over Alan Green, and myself included, I picked against him. I didn't think he could make the weight. I was not expecting him to pull it out. And I kind of overestimated Alan Green. I mean, beating Alan Green, is that as big an accomplishment as what Hopkins did? Probably not, but it was more decisive. And what he did, you know, Johnson, in moving down to a weight that he hadn't been below in 10 years, I think is much more impressive, especially at, you know, his age, which is right there with Hopkins. It's kind of like 1A, 1B, but because he was very decisive when he knocked the younger guy out that was strong at that weight, I got to give it to Glenn Johnson.
Yeah, and he knocked out a guy that was in stronger than that weight, and he had to move back down from 175, and a guy that Andre Ward obviously could not get out of there, where Glenn, who's an aging warrior, not just a ruler, but an aging warrior, was really impressive in doing it. So I got to agree with you. I give comeback of the year to the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson. You know? Now, most overrated. This one is, you know, interesting, very interesting. And we'll go off, like I said, to the least number. There was And there was a lot of names. Let me remind Fight fans here that are listeners of Leading the Ring. There was a lot of names really kind of thrown at us, but I picked the most numbers out of everybody. So if the name that you threw out is not picked, I'm sorry. I apologize. But let's go with most overrated here in 2010. The first one who got the ballot of 108. This was 108 from a lot of Fight fans that were emailing us here on leavingtheRing@gmail.com. Was Mike Jones, welterweight Mike Jones. A lot of people believe that he's overrated since his struggle against Jesus Soto Corras. That's a hard one there for me, Gabe. Even though he did have a tough time with Soto Corras, you got to, and I think you were the one, me and you were talking about this, if refresh my memory, we were both agreeing on that. I think a lot of people were overlooking the other fights that he had. I mean, this guy is a tough customer, and yeah, he did have a tough time with Soto Corras, but we can't right away say he's overrated.
I think the word overrated is overrated. You know, Mike Jones had a lot of trouble making the weight, and that's just a fact. You know, he's a really big guy. Maybe he overlooked Soto Corras, but Soto Corras is not, you know, he's not a shitty fighter. He's a very tough customer who's hard to get out of there. And I think Jones, to me, what he showed was a guy that had trouble making weight, doubted he could be in a long dogfight, thought, you know, because he could hit Corras flush that he could get him out of there. But instead, and he ended up shooting his wad, you know, really early on in the second round. And you could see it. He was a spent bullet after that, and he was kind of surviving. And I don't think he'd ever been in that kind of dogfight before, you know, where it was, you know, really do or die, and you really had to dig deep. For me, I'm impressed with the fact that he was, you know, kind of a shell of himself and was still able to put up a fight throughout the whole thing and get through it. A lot of guys would kind of fade out and give in and say, you know what, it's not my night, let me roll over. And he didn't do that. I didn't think he won the fight. And I'm glad that there's a rematch going to happen because, you know, maybe justice will get done or we'll just get another great fight or Mike will condition better and make the weight better. I don't think he's overrated at all.
We'll just find out whether or not 108 people were right. Is Mike Jones overrated? You know what I mean? If that rematch materializes and stuff, you know. Let's go with the second one, which was – the 139 people voted for Arthur Abraham being overrated. You know, a lot of people were high on Arthur Abraham. I was one of them, a guy that was very high on Arthur Abraham. And, you know, kind of made us have a letdown. You know, really, from what we saw from the beginning, we just saw that he really believed in his power and did not progress from it. He just ended up staying exactly what we saw him, which is a tough, durable guy, a counterpuncher, and doesn't do much. And happening with Carl Froch, we saw nothing. We just didn't see a whole lot. So I can understand why some fight fans say overrated, you know. Then from there,
middleweight title 10 times, you know.
Yeah.
So he's not a super middleweight, and he's losing. It's not like he lost to Alan Green, you know. He's losing the guys that are really at the top level. That's why you have a tournament like this, is to find out who's the best guys. And
exactly.
You know, we'll see. He said he was overtrained for Froch and felt like a spent bullet. We'll see if that's true or if it was just. Personally, I think, you know, he just had too much Carl Froch, you know, who fought a brilliant fight and did really well in winning and changing up his style, which is what you got to do in a tournament like this and at the top level. You can't just keep, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and hoping that this time it was going to work. You know, he needs to switch up his game. But maybe it's just you find out, like, is Victor Arcinian overrated because he lost to Beko? No. He's probably just not 115, you know, 118-pounder natural. He's an older guy moving up in weight, trying to compete with guys who are young to this weight or natural to this weight. Sometimes that's all it is, you know. It's just guys just not a super middleweight. No harm in that. He had 10 title defenses in middleweight and was the kind of guy that nobody wanted to deal with. And is it because he didn't bring money in Germany to the table? Absolutely not. It's because the guy was a very fierce puncher at that weight. And, you know, it's hard to get a decision in Germany. I wouldn't go there either. But there was money to be made there and risk to be taken. And nobody seemed to really want to do it. You know, you didn't see Kelly Pavlik jumping in the ring with Arthur Abraham.
Exactly. So, yep.
He's not overrated. There's a reason why Bruce Trampler and Mr. Goodman over there at Top Rank were not interested in taking that fight. And it wasn't just because they didn't want to go to Germany. It's because that guy is dangerous. So, no, not overrated.
So, really quick, let's just, you know, zip right through this and stuff. The last two, and then right after, and then we just keep going and stuff. Victor Ortiz getting 163. A lot of people felt that he's overrated. And then the number one that a lot of people were voting out was 173, Celestino Caballero. I got to tell you, the names that are thrown out here, I don't agree with a whole lot. Obviously, you guys can have a case for it. Overrated to me would be, I'll go with Gabe. I know none of the names here that I'm going to pick are overrated. Celestino Caballero, I mean, just remember this. Nobody wanted to fight the guy. Victor Ortiz, you cannot, you can't argue that the kid has skills. So saying that he's overrated, it's really tough to say that he's overrated. Has he got gun shy? Yes. But overrated when it comes to skill-wise, you got to admit, he has skills. He just has been gun-shy and using them now. Overrated to me is somebody. I can't even think of a name right now. I haven't really thought about who is overrated for 2010. Gabe, who do you got? What name?
I don't really have a name for that one. To me, like looking at Caballero, that's another guy that kind of looked at like everybody else on the planet. I'm fighting Jason Lutzow. I can kind of put in half effort. If I land on him, you know, I'm going to get him out of there. He's got a shaky chin, totally underestimated Lutzow, and paid the price. You know, is he overrated? I don't think so. You know, we'll find out if they rematch, you know, if he's overrated or if Lutzow is just playing better. But, you know, maybe I'm just too up with people tonight, but I just am not ready to throw guys under the bus, you know. I mean, maybe you could say Victor Ortiz is overrated, but where do you rate him? I don't really rate him as the best of the 140-pounders. He's kind of right below those guys. He hasn't had a clear, decisive win over an elite guy. I still think he's kind of somewhere in that gray area between contender and prospect until he proves otherwise. But to me, it's like I kind of rate everybody where they're at. Everybody's so case by case with me that I'm not really overrating him because I didn't rate him that high to begin with, you know? I mean, it's not a diss on him. It's a, I'm just not saying. At the same time, though, he's got a skill set. I talked about this in a mailbag a few weeks back, that out of everybody, you really look at him and Khan as the two guys that could probably move up to 147 and be able to handle the weight and to take their particular skills and attributes up with them. And if I had to pick a guy that might be a tricky problem for Amir Khan, it would probably be Victor Ortiz because of his size, because of his power, his southpaw style, the fact that he has no problem being a mover, as well as sometimes sitting down in his punches and throwing. And with Khan's chin, that could be a problem. So, you know, really until we get all these guys to kind of fight each other, it's hard to really rate them, you know,
right,
exactly where they are. All the evidence isn't in. And one fight, one loss. If anything, Victor is just exactly who we thought he is. You know, he's a guy that had a rough fight with Maidana, and now this is who he is. He's not going to dig in quite the way we want him to. He may never do that, but there's only one way to find out. And
okay, let's.
Caballero, we'll see.
Yeah, Caballero, we'll find out and stuff. Now, underrated. Okay, three names really quick. We're gonna just zoom right through them and stuff like that. Let's go. We'll go 179, Dmitry Pirog, 182. We had Joseph Arberco, and at 225, Carl Froch. I gotta agree with the Carl Froch. Underrated. A lot of people were not thinking that he could change. He was going to be a slugger, and he definitely proved his point. Arbeco is another guy. We thought that he was just going to stay stale, and he was going to just, you know, continue coming out the way he did when he got in with Yanni Perez. And Pirog, that there's kind of tough to say because there was not a whole lot of tape on him. Oh, I didn't see a whole lot of tape on him. And I think he's just on the right track there. And so I'm going to go with Carl Froch, Gabe, on that one there.
Yeah, I think a lot of us kind of, not threw him under the bus, but just kind of overlooked him. You know, I was kind of thinking, well, he is who he's going to be, and I don't really see him changing. I thought that he would just go straight to war with Arthur Abraham and get beat in that kind of war. And he shocked the shit out of me, definitely proved me wrong. And, yeah, I guess, you know, if those are the three names I got to pick, I would say, yeah, he was definitely underrated. But then also Joseph Agbeko. I didn't really give him much of a chance to beat Yanni Perez in the rematch. And, again, here's a guy that learned from his mistakes and said, you know what, you know, I'm going to do things the way I should have done them the first time. Boom, you know, here's a guy that also turned the tables. And Pirog, he wasn't rated at all. No one knew who he was. You know, we barely now understand who he is, just a little bit from that one fight. So, you know, all three of those guys are great candidates, but I'd probably go with Carl Froch just because I think most people just kind of, after seeing, you know, a pretty full picture of him, didn't give him much of a chance to move forward in the elite in this tournament, and he proved us all wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I got to go with him. Anyways, upset of the year. I like this one here, okay? And upset of the year, we have at 112, Garth Woods versus Anthony Medina. Medina at 100, like I said. And after that, we had at 191, Segura versus Ivan Calderon. After them, at a 201, Daniel Jacob versus Dmitry Pirog. And at 285, which was a big jump, okay? And Jason Litzau versus Celestino Caballero. Upset of the year, in my book, I would have to go with Jason Litzau versus, Celestino Caballero. I thought that was a huge upset because of the fact that Jason Litzau, really looked like he was in a decline of his career. His speech, everything else, just didn't seem like it was going to wave his way, and it did. It just was talking about the stars aligning correctly. It aligned it correctly with that kid in Vegas there, Gabe.
Yeah, that's just a clear one. 13-1 or 15-1 underdog, you know, I mean, you just can't beat it. You know, I mean, no one gave him a chance. except for that one guy that tried to give me the heads up, and I ignored it. The guy, my friend out of Minnesota, was like, I'm telling you, he's looking good. I'm like, he can't be looking that good. And I was totally wrong. Once again, without question, it's him. I mean, Pirog, if you really, you know, and I got a chance to look at the tape, and I didn't pick him to win, but I picked him to give Danny a hell of a fight. I knew that he was a quality fighter, and you could just tell by watching him in the gym and then watching him again, you know, in his previous fights. The guy is just all class, you know, it's definitely Lizzo. There's just no way anybody else comes close to that. Maybe, you know, Ricky Burns versus Raul Martinez was definitely one that was an upset. Nobody really expected Burns to do anything but be there to be beaten. And the guy, you know, just for one night only, you know, we'll see in the future what he does, rose to the occasion and won, man. And that was, for me, that was my fight of the year, you know, Burns Martinez. I just was really impressed by what he was able to pull off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and let's go really quick with Fighter of the Year. Okay. And surprisingly, the other affiliations had Manny Pacquiao, and ours is a hardcore boxing fan site, you know, leaveitintheRing.com, and everybody threw out names that I thought that were really good candidates to be Fighter of the Year. So we'll go with the least number. Arnon Mares was voted at 153 by Hardcore Fight fans as Fighter of the Year, Fighter of the Year. For doing his accomplishments with Yanni Perez to Victor Chinian. He had 153 votes. Coming right after him, neck to neck, there was two names neck to neck. Carl Froch got 217 for doing what he's done. You know, Mikel Kessler to Arthur Abraham. And Giovanni Segura having his upset win over Ivan Calderon, who was rated as pound for pound in his division. And a lot of people didn't believe Giovanni Segura was going to pull it off. And he was just one vote above Carl Froch, getting at 218. Carl Froch getting at 217. Now, the number one Fighter of the Year, and I hands down, no-brainer in my opinion, Sergio Martinez got an overwhelming 243. I absolutely agree with that vote. I think it's a Leaving in the Ring Fighter of the Year candidate. Absolutely right. Everybody else that I saw that were affiliation had Manny Pacquiao. Please, I don't think so. So Martinez, hand down. Gabriel, am I wrong? What is your opinion about it, brother?
I think, you know, it's something of a close race in a sense. You know, Juan Manuel Marquez, I think, was right there. With what he was able to do this year, you know, taking on Juan Diaz and Michael Katsidis, although those styles kind of benefited him, and he'd already beaten Juan Diaz before, so I took him off the list. Giovanni Segura is really right there, man. He fought four times, and not a lot of people gave him a chance. I think you and I both picked him to beat Ivan Calderon, and he did it in style on the guy's home trip. Really impressive. But then you look at the other wins, and they're not as impressive. You know, there were more fights that he was favored to win. To me, it's clearly Sergio Martinez. The guy goes from having a rough 2009, you know, with the draw that wasn't a draw against Kermit Cintron, and the loss that, in my opinion, wasn't a loss against Paul Williams, to come back, capture the middleweight title in dominant fashion against Kelly Pavlik in a fight that he was not favored to win. Many people, including myself, didn't pick him to win. And then he turns around and tops that by knocking out an elite-level fighter in two rounds with the punch of the year, the knockout of the year, over Paul Williams. Just absolutely stunning. Not a lucky punch, not a desperation blow, perfectly planned out, perfectly executed. Absolutely Fighter of the Year, Sergio Martinez.
KO of the Year, really quick, okay? We're going to give you down the rundown to the least, to the most, in numbers of pick by fight fans were throwing at us. David Lemieux versus Hector Camacho Jr. and got 131. Pirog and Jacobs got 142. Glenn Johnson versus Green got 198. And Sergio Martinez versus KO's Paul the Punisher Williams got 333. I think the fight fans got it right when it comes to KO of the year. Sergio Martinez knocking out Paul Williams in the second round. There was a picture that was made and sent to me. I thought it was hilarious. No punt to Paul Williams, but they had a picture of Paul Williams face first on the canvas, a Snickers bar above him, and it said, "Not going anywhere for a while? Have a Snickers bar."
Wow.
Thought it was great. It was terrible, but I have to say, I was busting my ass up for a long ass time.
Wow. You know, all these are such good knockouts, dude. I mean, well,
yeah.
Glenn Johnson Greenwood was a little bit not as clean as I'd like, and he wasn't all the way out. Escalante Ponce de Leon was a hell of a knockout. It was like one of those right in front of you, perfect
yep.
angle, beautiful knockout. Camacho Lemieux, Camacho might still be out. Angulo Julio, that was a pretty good knockout. I mean, you know, as right hands go, it was a beautiful thing. But it just, again, in terms of meaning, what it did, the shift of balance of power to kind of a small, you know, a smaller promoter in Ludabella, to a guy that really wasn't supposed to have that middleweight title. I mean, Williams was all but crowned the middleweight champion going into that fight with all the things we've talked about, as in being named second and the cut and all that stuff. And Martinez just said, no, I am the middleweight champion. You are now knocked
yep.
the hell out. And there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about
yep.
it. And
I'm having a great run of the year, and I'm going to do what
yeah.
I got to do.
and just the fact that they game planned for that punch, you know, that they knew this was the opening we were going to get, and when that opening happens, shoot through it with this shot. Let's get it done. It's just, you know, it wasn't like all those other punches were kind of random punches. This was one they were looking for, and they landed it. And to me, you know, both of them, and we're running out of time, that's knockout of the year. And to me, Gabriel Sarmiento, who is the guy that came up with that game plan, is trainer of the year. No question in my mind.
Absolutely. Prospect of the year, you know, just really quick, and I'll just throw out the three names without giving out numbers and all that. First runner-up was Saul Canelo Alvarez, then David Lemieux to Mikey Garcia. Well, that's a tough one there, you know, because Saul obviously has a title, but I don't consider him a champion. I still consider him as a contender or a prospect in that term there, but I'm going to go with Mikey Garcia regardless. I think Mikey is there in the opening breaking of leaving contender. And where Saul's, man, it's tough. I don't know. Prospect of the year, it is tough. You know, David Lemieux still, too, also is a guy that could be breaking away from contender. I mean, breaking away from prospect and just being somebody else now going into a championship caliber. Same thing with Saul and same thing with Mikey. But I like Mikey a whole lot here, so I'll go with Mikey.
Yeah, I just think, you know, he fought five times, and you could see a real clear progression in where he was going from, you know, taking out Tomas Villa in one round, which was impressive. And then really the Cornelius Locke fight, who's not an easy style, and he just got absolutely dominated by Garcia and, you know, and getting stopped in 11 rounds. And then Oliver Lansky, that last fight of the year, you could just see that progression in Garcia. He just went from prospect to contender, real pro, you know, just very tight, compact shots, finishes well, knows exactly what he's doing in the ring from beginning to end. He knows what story he's telling and how to tell it. To me, this is very clear that he is. There's a lot of prospects to choose from, but I think Mikey is well on his way to a title, and definitely I had him as prospect of the year.
Definitely, you know. And to end it really quick, because we only got about maybe 2 minutes here for the Hardcore Fight Fans, 3 hours of boxing talk here on My Boxing's official show, Leave It in the Ring, with your host, Dave Duenas, and your host, Gabriel Montoya. Rematches that people want to see that's going to that should happen here, 2011. Please participate in this. Names worth throwing out, but we're asking for people to give out their votes really, really quick here, okay? We're going to throw them down, the names. Please email us and let us know what your thoughts are. Throw us it on Twitter or on Facebook. However you want to, you know, participate with your vote of who should have a rematch here. First one is, we got names throwing out, Dawson versus Pascal. A lot of people want to see a rematch on that one. Pascal versus Hopkins, which looks like they're asking for an immediate rematch. So we might end up getting that. Cotto versus Antonio Margarito, which looks like it could be on the road too. Martinez versus Williams. A lot of people are interested in seeing a rubber match. Ortiz versus Medina. Pacquiao versus Marquez. Calderon versus Segura. Fernando Montiel versus Hasegawa. And Soto versus Anthony Leon. Khan versus Medina. And Devin Alexander versus Bradley, even though it hasn't happened. And that would be the end of it. Send out who you guys think should have a rematch. What rematch you'd like to see happen in 2011 here on leavingtheRing@gmail.com. leavingtheRing@gmail.com. Once again, it was great being back. A week is too long. Thank you guys for letting us know that a week is too long. You guys don't want to hear us be off for a week. I'm being told, Gabriel, nobody wants us to go on vacation. You know what I mean? And rightfully so, because I do enjoy coming on here, just BSing boxing with everybody, man. But then again, brother, it's the end of the show, and what else can we say?
Well, see you next week. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We've got some great fights. Friday night fights, ESPN, Ruslan Provodnikov, Demetrius Andrade are in co-features. And then you have Brandon Gonzalez on Telepachua, same night Friday. And Ivan Redbach, also, a co-feature. Bebe Shumanov is taking on William Joppy over in Kazakhstan on Saturday night. And that's about it going on. And there's a lot of other fights, but you're going to have to find a stream for them. So we'll see you guys next week. Great show, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, brother. And if you're going to be in Fairfield in the Bay Area by Oakland and Vallejo, actually, hey, take a chance to go out there to go to Brandon Gonzalez, Solo Boxeo. I will be out there. Look for your boy, 97 Rough, David Duenas from Leaving the Ring. I'm always there to chop it up, boxing. Until next week, guys, we'll bring you another great show. And next week we'll be back, Leaving the Ring Español. They'll be back up on the radio. So please tune in for that. Again, have a good night, guys, and talk to you guys next week.